Oh, Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. Welcome to our Monday show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Call us. Text us. 312-981-7200. Let us know what's on your mind. What's on your mind? Everything good?
Phew. Just got back from the Trump rally. It was really hard getting here.
They had some problems.
I would like to talk to somebody who was there.
I would love to talk to somebody who was there.
312-981-7200. Because you're hearing both sides of it.
Yeah, you are hearing both sides of it. So somewhere in the middle, I guess, lies the truth, right? Is that what everybody thinks and says?
I don't know what the truth is. I really don't. I know that, you know, people have the right to protest. I've never really been a fan of that because I'm a baby and I would never, like, do that
of
and interrupt something.
Yourself.
But I understand.
You could see the purpose it serves.
Absolutely.
Right.
You're also hearing Donald Trump's, or not Donald Trump, but the supporters' First Amendment rights were violated. He's the one who didn't show up.
Correct. And there's some speculation as to whether or not there was a phone call placed between the police and Donald Trump deciding whether or not it was safe. Some people say that he's fabricating that phone call never took place. I don't know for sure. I also don't know for sure. CNN kept showing footage of the more violent moments of what would have been the rally. And then Donald Trump was on with Don Lemon saying, you keep showing the same footage, but it was nowhere near as bad as you're showing. And I wasn't there, so I don't know. But the footage I saw looked pretty bad.
312-981-7200. There was a high schooler that my son goes to high school with who is all over video, who got in a skirmish.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's a supporter. I don't even know. I don't know this kid. I just know that there were a lot of young people at this rally.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of young people were thinking about going to this rally, and I'm glad one of mine didn't.
Yeah.
I was mesmerized by it. That's what I do on Friday nights. I watch political TV.
Who doesn't?
Right.
And, ever since Don Kirshner's rock concert stopped, what else is there to watch?
Right. You know, and there were definite skirmishes, and, you know, I don't think any of that is made up. I don't know if they went in there with the idea of fighting or what, but I saw, from what I could tell, either side instigating one or another of the fight, so...
But think about it. If you're there as a Donald Trump supporter, you have every right to be there. Okay?
Agreed.
When you start seeing the footage of build a wall. If I was there, I would have to say, shut your mouth.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that separates his supporters from his detractors is just that. But then what you had is back-to-back days. You had the rally canceled here. And then in Dayton, Ohio, the guy that was, I guess, rushing the stage, and then Secret Service had to surround Trump. So is that going to be how it goes now? I know he's had one or two rallies since then that have come off a little cleaner, but is that what we can now expect whenever he shows up for a rally? Is it going to get dangerous and more dangerous as time goes on?
Isn't that kind of his message?
He says no.
But it sure...
He says just the opposite.
Without exactly saying, go out and fight for me, he's kind of saying, go out and fight for me and your choice because we're going to make America great again.
He has a way, an almost magical leprechaun way, of twisting things and saying, this is where I could say this, or this is where I would normally say this, and then he says it.
About,
you know,
I heard Andrea reporting this morning, he says 25,000 people were there, but the UIC Pavilion holds 10 and it wasn't even full.
Right.
So, DNA Info is reporting on that. They saw the contract and they were expecting 8,000.
Well, I guess, you know, in this day and age, you can say anything and you can read something on the internet and then it's true.
Well, it's not, though. I mean, it's funny to me because he does it so often that it's no longer an event. It's
right.
You no longer call him on it.
Right.
Hillary Clinton's in a bit of a kerfuffle over the weekend because, you know, she was in, I think it was Ohio, and she said, you know, in 93, 94, when I was fighting for health care, where was Bernie Sanders? You know, he wasn't there. Where was Bernie?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Sanders campaign tweeted out a picture of Bernie Sanders standing behind Hillary Clinton at a rally.
Oh,
right?
Oh, you forget.
Well, you forget, you know, whatever. So clearly Sanders was there. It's become this big thing. Oh, should she apologize? Should she not apologize? What an embarrassment. She's got trustworthy issues, and here she did this. You know, so she's got this big thing to do, or big-ish thing to deal with. Trump's like, 25,000, 8,000.
It's the same thing.
It doesn't really matter.
It's the same thing. I admire a politician more if they just straight out say, hey, I made a mistake on something. I said this. I meant this. I know it shows a sign of weakness, but I don't look at it that way. I look at it as more sign of
realism.
I said this and then we checked our facts. And as it turns out, I was wrong. I'll try to be more careful. I think that makes them more human. I like it more that way.
Hillary Clinton, supporting gay marriage. She didn't at first. And
right.
She's admitted to that. That whole sketch when she was on Saturday Night Live was I could have jumped on that a little sooner.
Right.
So, people's like, she's a liar because of that. Well, no, she didn't lie. She didn't support it then, and she changed her mind.
Right.
Just admit it, people.
You can change your mind on things, right? Who amongst us hasn't at some point thought about something a little bit and said, all right, I thought about it this way, and now more facts have come up. Yeah.
I'm telling you, everybody blasted John Kerry for being a flip-flopper. We are all flip-floppers. We really are, our life changes.
Right.
We got to take some calls of people who were there or just your thoughts. 312-981-7200. You see all this coverage. You see, a prominence on Saturday Night Live and the Weekend Update. And you think to yourself, am I proud of Chicago or am I embarrassed about Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
312-981-7200. Bill Left, Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Want to take some calls?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
And you know what? I'm not telling anyone who to vote for because you wouldn't listen to me anyway, and I don't know who I'm voting for yet. But do your homework and choose wisely. Is that safe
to
say?
That seems fair. Sure. All right.
All right. This is Frank. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Wendy, Bill. Good morning.
Hey.
Steve, you too. I'm starting to get a little worried that I see a lot of Republicans and conservatives on TV and the programs putting the blame on the Democrats for this violence. And just this morning, I read again on the internet that Bill Bennett, the arch conservative from the Bush years, is writing a story saying that Trump may be killed by the Democrats. And killed, he means get rid of, not rhetorically or whatever.
Literally,
he says that the Democrats are going to kill Trump. Now, I think they're trying to lay the groundwork that if something does happen, the Democrats are going to get the blame and all the Trump's voters are naturally then going to go vote for a conservative. This is ridiculous. The Democrats love Trump. Personally, I'm a Democrat. I would love to see Trump run against a Democrat. It's the conservatives who are getting their panties in a knot, so to speak. At the thought of Trump taking over their power. So, they're trying to get the word out that it's the Democrats who are violent. That's not the case. It's Trump's own people that are doing this.
It's both. It's both people that are violent, because I was just telling Bill off the air, if I went to that rally to protest, and that's our right to protest, I am a woman. If I was a black person, if I was a Muslim, if I was a Mexican, if I was any minority, I would
feel
be scared.
In danger, right? Yeah.
College kids protest. It's one of the things that they're on this earth to do. Going back to the late 60s, the Kent State riots and all those other things, college kids protest. Sometimes a little punch is thrown or something. That's not the end of the world. But I think when conservatives start to put the blame on the Democrats, the liberals, for starting this and doing it when they're the ones that would benefit if Trump disappeared, not the other way around.
Quit blaming everyone else. Take responsibility for your own actions. Thank you so much, Frank. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
So now Donald Trump is placing a lot of the blame on what happened here Friday night on Bernie Sanders and his supporters. And then he made a statement over the weekend about how Bernie Sanders better watch out because they could start creating a stir at Bernie Sanders rallies. I don't think there's any evidence that Bernie Sanders said to anybody who's supporting him, hey, go screw up that rally in Chicago. I can't imagine that being the case. He doesn't seem the type.
Someone was at the Bernie Sanders rally and wants to jump in on this. This is Randy. Hey, Randy.
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy birthday there, Ms. Cochran.
He's gone.
We'll tell him. We'll put a note in his box.
He's out of here.
Oh, he's out of here. Okay.
He has a box?
Yeah, he's got a box.
What's up, Randy?
Yeah, I was down there Saturday, and we stood in line for 5 hours waiting to get in. I mean, the line was huge.
Now, this is at the Bernie Sanders rally in Argo Summit?
Yeah, at the U of I there. It was great.
Wait, so you were at the Trump rally or Bernie Sanders?
Bernie Sanders.
Okay.
All right.
Bernie Sanders, yeah. And we stood in line for 5 hours, and never once did I ever worry about or be concerned about anybody becoming, getting out of hand or out of control. Every once in a while, we get somebody in a truck go by and yell and say, F you this or that, and nobody ever retorted. They just ignored them. So, there was never any fear of any kind of retaliation or somebody getting crazy and fighting. I felt perfectly safe.
I don't think there's a lot of hate involved in Bernie Sanders' campaign. I think that's the big difference.
Not really. There's some really wonderful people I met, made some new friends, had a great time. Feet were sore, but that's okay. It's worth the wait.
Thank you so much for checking in, Randy. We appreciate it.
So the atmosphere was a little bit different at the Bernie Sanders rally.
And that surprises no one, does it?
Non-rally. What you asked before is a good question about, are you proud or ashamed of the city of Chicago for what happened on Friday night? I'm somewhere in the middle, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, half of me says, there are a lot of Republicans who don't think Trump is the right candidate, too.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It scares me. It scares me for the future. The children are our future, Bill, and
That's
it scares me.
I feel for the cops on Friday.
Oh, it's terrible.
And they did a great job.
They got so much going against them.
Right.
And then here's this just shenanigans, and they've got to control it,
Yeah.
No one needed that.
No. Right. It's a tough time to be a cop and a Trump supporter, in my opinion, but I don't know. Hi, Karen. What do you think? Embarrassing for the city, or are you proud of the city?
Well, I was embarrassed, and I have to tell you, I was out of town. I was in South Carolina. And it was a wonderful day we spent. And then we came home, to crash, to sit down. And then this is. And, of course, they kept, repeating the same story. This was Fox, CNN, over and over again, the shoving, the pushing. Then you've got the Mexican flag. You've got the sombrero people. You've got the, no, my God, now it's a racist issue. It was totally embarrassing. And the frustration, again, to see Chicago, put in this light, and then the horses lined up, the police officers on the horses. It was so frustrating to watch.
Hey, Karen, you said it becomes a racist issue when people are chanting, build the wall. Don't you think it's already a racist issue?
Oh, yes. And this just reinforced it, So I was amazed, and to think that, here I'm sitting in a lovely resort area, and I'm watching, and this is the city that I grew up in, and I'm watching it like the big burp that comes back up again. And I thought, oh my
never,
God.
Never, never, ever heard that.
Yes, and it's, and I thought, oh, the police again, they've had, the issues, and it quiets down. The best thing Trump did was that he canceled it. And I mean,
he's no dummy. He's not going to go there when, tempers are flaring so high.
Right. But it was so frustrating. And, are the police going to keep the lid on things? And then the pushing, the back and forth. And then the one guy that they kept having come on, the African-American, on the podium there and trying to drag him away. It was like, oh, no, again. And I'm as old as dirt. Kids, I am, and I've lived through a lot, and a lot of my connection and love is for Chicago, but I was so frustrated to see this playing out.
Yeah,
so.
We look like animals to the rest of the country.
Thank you, Karen.
We do.
We do, but then we look like we're standing up for something that matters as well. So
that's what I mean, is I can't figure out if I'm embarrassed or not about what happened on Friday night.
Can you be both?
I think I am both.
I really think geography has nothing to do with this case.
What is
it? I think this is a national story, a national Trump or not Trump, it might have happened if it had happened in Kansas City, well, it did happen in St. Louis earlier in the day, or
not
it happened
like
in Kansas City later where they threw pepper spray at protesters.
Yeah.
You don't have a different view toward Kansas City, right? I mean, this is about, are you for Trump or against Trump? I don't think it matters where you live too much.
No, but it matters in the way in which you handle it, I think. Vicki, you were at the rally?
I was, yes.
Okay, what's your take?
We got inside. We were waiting for him to start talking.
Obviously, you're a Trump fan.
I was undecided, actually.
Okay.
I would say my husband is, but I just kind of wanted to go hear what he had to say.
Which is a great way to do things, people. Listen to the candidates and make up your mind.
Sure. So when they announced whoever it was that came out and announced that he wasn't coming, all I can say is the crowd erupted with Bernie chants.
May I ask something, though? Was it crazy and reckless and out of control prior to the announcement that he wasn't showing up?
Not inside, but from what I heard, outside it was.
And that's what protesters are there to do. They're protesting.
Sure.
There were a few incidents where the cops pulled people out while we were waiting, but...
You were never afraid, though, Vicky? There was never a moment? No? All right. All right.
No.
Because I think...
I would say maybe the problem with outside and the people inside didn't have much knowledge about what was going on, but as soon as they canceled it, you could tell who was Trump supporters, and all you heard was Bernie chant. So...
I know you can't change the course of time, and you can't say what if for the rest of your life, but I'm just curious, if Donald Trump did show up, if this would have been such a problem, would it have been worse? But it seems like mayhem broke out when he said, I'm not going, which I don't doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was a good decision on his part.
Safer.
But honestly, I wouldn't say I'm a supporter, but I don't, inside, the problem was not with the Trump supporters. It was with those people who were chanting Bernie. Is where the problem came from.
Yeah. All right.
But how should that start a problem? If, you know, they're at a rally, there are going to be people that aren't Trump supporters that do get a ticket and get inside. If they're chanting Bernie, what's the difference? It's a free country. Can't we say Bernie? No, I like Trump.
If you're at a Blackhawks game and the majority of the crowd starts yelling red wings,
are you going to get in a fight?
I'm not, but I like to think I'm a little more sensible than some.
Why can't we all be a little more sensible?
Those days are gone.
Vicky, I'm glad you got out there alive.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Vicky, so much
for calling.
All right, we need to take a break. If you can hold on, if you want to discuss this further, we're here for you, 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. We're recapping one of the major events, or two or three, of the weekend, and that's the Donald Trump rally that was supposed to take place on Friday night. You know the story. It ended up not taking place. There were some small acts of, I guess you'd classify them as violent, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think if I remember, how many people were arrested? Is it four?
Around a half a dozen, just under a half a dozen, I think. But there were some injuries. So we had asked the question, does this make you proud of the city? Does it make you embarrassed by the city? Where do you stand on it? Were you at the rally? And what does this hold for the future? If this is what's going on now, what's going to happen in the future?
It's a great question, and I don't know where I feel. I'm kind of like a sort of proud that we stood up for something that we wanted. The people who protested.
Right.
But then it's also looking at our city, like, don't we have enough going on?
If you lived somewhere else and you looked at the stories that have been Chicago-centric over the last year or two, would it make you want to come here? I don't think I would be afraid to come here, I think. There's violence in the streets. There's the political corruption that's always existed. There's a rally that didn't even take place, maybe for the better, maybe not for the better. I'm not sure the rest of the country perceives us the way we should be perceived.
And now Trump wants to press charges against the protesters who interrupt his rallies. Oh, my God. We'll talk about that, too. Danny, what do you think? How did it make Chicago look?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. I was ashamed for Chicago. That wasn't a protest. That was a riot waiting to happen. And thank God them cops were stopping it. It was terrible.
The police officers, as Steve Bertrand mentioned, did a great job, and they're in a terrible position.
Unbelievable. These cops are unbelievable. I mean, between all the killing and all this other stuff, our city is terrible. It looks like a big sewer. I'm ashamed to say I came from Chicago.
That's the worst part is we shouldn't be ashamed to think that or say that.
But neither you nor I defended that when Danny said that.
It's hard to defend. It is hard to defend. I mean, I only know what I saw on television. I was not at the rally, but I was watching it and saying, oh, look at the carnage that's going on at a political rally. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
And I haven't been following all these, you know, rallies. I just haven't turned on the news. I saw this. I couldn't turn it off. I was so angry. Saturday, I couldn't listen to the radio or nothing. It was disgusting. There was no reason for it. I mean, you want to protest, fine. But don't start a riot. Some people are stepping on American flags, stopping ambulances. I mean, come on.
Well, I mean,
It wasn't so bad. What exactly happened that was so bad here Friday? I mean,
weren't there four arrests or something pretty minor like that?
There weren't many arrests.
There were four arrests around my house on Saturday night. I mean, come on. There was a big political rally. There was a guy who champions this, you know, throw him out, I'll pay for the lawyers sort of mentality. There have been growing protests at these events around the country. Now, again, remember, in St. Louis on Friday afternoon, it was a very rough protest.
Sure.
And this comes after a guy got cold-cocked in North Carolina. And
would kill if he had the chance again.
Said I might have to kill him. And Donald Trump, rather than saying peace, peace, was saying, I understand why my people are upset. This, you know, they didn't do anything bad. So he said also, I wish they wouldn't do it. So all of this was sort of growing, okay? And we knew for weeks that there were going to be a lot of people try to get into the Trump rally in Chicago like they were in St. Louis and disrupt and protest. That's sort of the new normal kind of stuff. When things went south was when they canceled the protest.
And what
or when they canceled the rally. Now, Donald Trump says police told him to do it. That hasn't quite been backed up yet. But that's when, and then when everything was sort of loitering around, then we saw the pictures of the people who didn't go home. So, I mean, up until then, and even then, it wasn't that bad. It just was a noisy, democratic sort of kerfuffle. Going with kerfuffle.
Is it
I
a
like
kerfuffle?
It. Danny,
Steve?
Thank you for your opinion.
Steve, do you think the media played it up a little bit?
No, I mean, I think it was delightful. I loved watching it. I sat there on my TV and I watched it. But really, this is just the next step of what's been happening through this whole campaign.
Did you hear any of Trump calling out Don Lemon and CNN saying, you keep showing the same three or four clips over and over again? It was the worst few minutes, you know, the most semi-violent few minutes, and he called them out on it, saying, you keep showing the bad stuff. Do you agree with that or not agree with that?
I was watching MSNBC and CNN, and you did keep seeing that, but you always do that. They always keep showing the same things.
Right.
They weren't pretending that they were more than one.
Right.
Or, you know, that they were different events. You just kept seeing the same knucklehead go up on stage, and then he got involved with the fight down in the crowd. So,
but no, I notice this. After Trump called out CNN for that, because I had watched it quite a while when he was on, and then after, like once he paid attention to that and noticed that, then they showed the outside of the rally, like the more peaceful, everybody just kind of standing around, nobody taking swings at each other. Like once Trump said, hey, you keep showing those same three or four scenes, then they kind of went, oh, all right, well, then we'll show peace then. Well,
although that's boring to show peace.
It was boring.
And that's what we expect.
And those three or four scenes are what was most newsworthy.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to see.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, no, that...
And
Donald Trump doesn't get to have it his way every time.
Exactly. And there was no riot gear out there. There was no, I mean, to me, I'm looking, yeah, there's a couple people involved in a, what are you using? Kerfuffle? Is that what we're using?
It's a kerfuffle.
Yeah.
All
right. Melee? Could that
be? I mean, had he gone through with the protest, I don't know what would have happened. I'm assuming there just would have been a bunch of disruptions like there were in other places. And
he would throw people out.
Right.
I just wonder, like, I almost feel like that would have been his moment to come in and say, we got to come together here.
It would have been interesting because it's non-characteristic of him to do that. His thing is somebody's saying or doing something against me. I'm going to repel that person.
So the protesters were doing exactly what he has taught.
Exactly. But then you say, is it more to his advantage to have the event canceled? Because then as you hear, he goes, you know, they're infringing on my freedom of speech. I'm there to, you know, you could say that, I guess.
I don't know how to spell it, but you can quote
you
can me
say
on that.
That. But so does this work to his advantage or his disadvantage to have that event canceled on
Friday
night? I
can see almost no way. I can see almost no way how this could help him, which means it almost certainly will.
Right. Right.
Good point. More than 10,000 people officially RSVP'd that they would be going to the university to protest the event.
Yeah.
Ahead of Trump's Chicago campaign stop, more than 50,000 people signed a MoveOn.org petition in an attempt to get the event canceled. So they were the big people behind this.
Right.
But we all knew that.
Right,
we were doing stories that day about the people who had been out there for 24 hours.
Yep.
So, you know, in other rallies, you control the crowd. You check to see who's coming in. You know, they didn't do that.
But what about the conspiracy theorists who say that this rally was planned for a college campus because they knew there'd be more tempers flared at a college campus setting as opposed to somewhere else? Could that be true?
I heard that, and I heard that, you know, that he picked UIC, which is largely Hispanic and Asian and African American, and You know, so he's sort of thumbing his nose at.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think he needed a big room in a big city.
And there
and the pavilion was available in Chicago in a major media market city. I mean, I don't think they were thinking it that deeply.
Alderman, 15th Ward Alderman Ray Lopez and Congressman Luis Gutierrez also pledged to protest the rally.
Yeah.
And you can protest things.
You can. The key is trying to do it peacefully.
But how do you,
so where does the line get drawn?
Here's my big question, and maybe someone can help answer this. Steve, you mentioned the UIC predominantly minorities. Is that what you're saying? That
largely, yeah. I don't know what the exact numbers are. But.
So if you are a minority,
yeah,
how could you support this guy, and how could you – wouldn't you want to come out to prevent him from being president? And that's a lot of people here in the city.
I would definitely not say in all cases, but you would think in most cases.
So how could there be, I mean, if a minority is out there and you have a Trump supporter who is like, let's build a wall, we're going to keep you out,
right,
or, you know, send you back. How can anything peaceful come of that?
Right. You saw the guy, and I'm not sure which of his rallies over the weekend, certainly one of the rallies that wasn't canceled. Some guy showed up with a T-shirt that said something on it about being a legal alien. He had come over from Poland, and he did it through legal channels, and Trump called him up on stage, and he was a hero for the day. Did you see any of that, guy?
I didn't see that.
So I guess there's a guy that you go, well, he's an immigrant, but he was making a point to say, but I'm doing it the Donald Trump way. I'm playing by the rules, and everybody loved him. He was extremely popular, but... I to your point, I don't know. I always wonder that if somebody seems to be coming down hard, as Donald Trump seems to be, on almost every group that isn't white guys.
Right.
So why would you throw your support his way? And yet you look at the chemical makeup of his supporters. It is mostly white guys, but not entirely.
And it's not fair for me to say, okay, Trump supporters, you're all racists, you're all bigots. It's not fair for me to say
sure.
that because that's not
it's
true.
Not necessarily true.
But, you know, birds of a feather.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's this 69-year-old Yorkville woman, Bridget Peterson, who did the Heil Hitler salute. She made it to Saturday Night Live. We're going to try and talk to her sometime before our show ends today. Because
right.
I just want to know why she did that.
Right. We'll find out. All right. More of your calls, more of your texts, and more discussion next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. If you're just joining us, it's Bill and Wendy, and we're discussing the events of the weekend. As you know, the Donald Trump rally was canceled on Friday night, maybe for the better, maybe not. Did we handle ourselves well? Did we not handle ourselves well? 312-981-7200.
Hey, Bob, thanks for joining us. Hey, Bob. Hi, Bobby. Bob?
Hi, Bob.
Bob's being silenced by the man.
Bob, are you there? Breaker 19. Bob got scared.
All right.
He said it's not Trump's fault, and then he got scared.
All right, well, I'd love to discuss this with him, but is it or is it not? I'm guessing if you're a fan of Donald Trump's, you're going to say this is absolutely not his fault. Why would this be his fault? It was the people who came and disrupted his rally. But if you are not a fan of his, you'll say this is a guy who paints a climate that's a little bit problematic and a little bit violent. So, that's a flip of the coin if it is or is not Donald Trump's fault as to what happened Friday night.
I don't know if it's his fault, but I feel he has some responsibility.
It was inevitable.
It was
going to happen
right.
Somewhere. Who, you know, whether it's his fault or his responsibility, I mean, he's not the one who made the signs and tried to sneak into an opponent's rally. You know, that were the protesters. But just the tenor of the whole thing, it just was inevitable. It was going to happen somewhere, someday.
But, Steve, don't you think, and everything you said I believe is true, but I don't think that that's done. I think as this gets more and more heated, you're sadly going to see more of this.
You had
don't
police
you?
Using pepper spray on protesters outside a presidential rally, a campaign rally in Kansas City.
Yeah.
When has that ever happened before?
It is
and
not.
That came after Friday, so yeah.
All right, this is interesting. Hi, Eric. I have just found an app that I love, and it's a police tracker. You can listen to the police calls. I've turned into Eddie Schwartz with
good
breasts.
For you. Yeah.
So
yeah, me too.
You were, well, you were tracking it on the scanner.
I was shaken by what I was hearing over the police airwaves when the worst of this was going on. There was an officer trapped in the parking garage next to this after they made the announcement that they canceled it. He was rushed by protesters. They were inside breaking car windows and stuff, and they couldn't get other guys to him because of the crowds around. All the streets were blocked.
You hear both sides of it. And, you know, we hear that there were four arrests and a few kerfuffles going on. But I also had read that there were protesters throwing things at the cars of Trump supporters, whether or not they had stickers on their cars. I don't know. And windows were broken. So that's interesting to hear.
Yes. And I was afraid for the police because, They had one guy was on his radio, so he must have had a partner, but he was like trapped and they couldn't get anybody to him. And then later on when they did, they needed, I can't believe they said only four arrests because they said to send the wagons over. They got people lined up that they caught inside this parking garage smashing people's windows. So I don't know where the reporting is on this, but it seems like it's only about what just happened a little bit. Except the whole picture.
See, that's unacceptable behavior. Remember when the Bulls won too and windows were being broken?
Yeah.
That is unacceptable.
And what they did was at the end when they were cleaning up, I had listened. I was coming back from Milwaukee, so I listened to them for 2.5 hours. They said after they pulled the blocking of the streets, they sent squad cars out to patrol along all the streets where there's stores so that they didn't get any of what we were just talking about.
Darn it, I am so
windows and stuff.
I'm so jealous of you, Eric. I wish I would have thought to listen to the scanner, because what a night to listen.
Eric, you got to call Wendy the next time something like this flares up. Call her at the house.
All you got to do is when you're driving, that's when I turn it on. I'd rather listen to that or to WGN in the morning. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
It is nice. Fun
listening to the police scanners, and what a great night to listen.
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
But there was a CBS reporter that was handcuffed and thrown down, and there is a video of it.
Yeah.
And we're trying to get in touch with him as well because he was trying to say, I have press credentials.
Right.
I'm covering this.
Right.
I don't fault the police because in that moment, you got to keep the peace. But it appeared he wasn't doing anything.
Ugh. Oh, what a night. All right. Well, we have to do news. Steve has the news, and that's coming up next. And then we'll talk to a comedian with a sad story. I know usually if you're a comic, you think, well, everything must be laughs all the time. Well, not necessarily.
What was the sad clown portrait?
Oh, I
Red Buttons.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Red Skelton. Red Buttons was always happy.
I get my reds mixed
right,
up.
Of course,
what about
do.
Johnny Red Kerr?
He's
was
fine.
Always
he
happy.
Was always happy. All right, we'll take a quick break and then we'll do more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Dobie, Wendy selected this music, and I can't think of a more appropriate song to kind of highlight yourself, your career, and your new book.
My life.
Dobie Maxwell is here, a Chicago comedian who has made very well for himself, but his story behind the scenes might not be quite as pretty. And he has a book called Monkey in the Middle, which comes out today. We'll give you more information about that. But first, hello.
Thank you. Well, I've known you guys for such a long time. And to see you guys working, and we're working after all these years, you're still young and gorgeous. I have been
He's
drugged through the
Bill,
mud.
By the way.
No, I'm
pointing
to Wendy, too,
no.
Young lady. Your
that
stunning beauty shakes me to the bone.
Right.
Sure. Of course it does. How could it
now,
not?
Now, this, you guys will be able to relate to this story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm shocked about your story, Dobie. I've known you a long time. You are mm-hmm. a comic, and Bill was telling me a few things that kind of went a different way in your life, and hence the book, Monkey in the Middle.
I am the monkey. My best friend, now, I met you, Wendy, your friend Carla Felicia,
yes.
Very funny comedian, and when Wendy came around to the comedy clubs, we said, oh, that's Carla's friend, Wendy. She's nice. She's funny. We all liked you. Everything's cool. You fit in with us. My friend, mm-hmm. his name is Tim, better known as Timbo, decided that he wanted to rob a bank mm-hmm. that he worked at in Milwaukee, mm-hmm. my hometown, and he robbed the bank twice. And he decided to blame one of them on me, and I had to wear a wire for the government to get him to confess that he did it. I'm not wearing one today, by the way. And
I sent him out of here now.
I sent him to prison for 6.5 years. So that's a really hard thing to do.
And this was your best friend.
My childhood best friend. We both, I call comedians are dented cans. We didn't get enough love at home. We did get the hugs at home. We had to come out in honky-tonks and nightclubs to get the love from strangers. So he had a bad family. I was raised by bikers. My grandparents raised me. And we were friends since 11 years old. We went through coming-of-age things together. He was closer than my blood brother.
Yeah.
So how does this happen, though? You're out together. How did...
Well, I was working at a radio station in Milwaukee, and it was a dream to be on the morning show, the hot, rockin', flame-throwing. And the day after Thanksgiving, I heard the big three words you never want to hear in the broadcast business, shut the door. Nothing good ever happens after those three words. I got fired. And it was miserable. It was the only job I ever wanted in my life. And if you could believe this, it was December 15th, 1991. The Bears creamed the Packers. The Bears beat the Packers. I lost my job.
We're going way back.
Way
on this,
back
obviously.
In history with the Paleozoic football era. Right.
When the planet was in black and white.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
I remember
right.
that game, sure.
I think David Jansen was still alive.
Yes, he was.
Time. So to make a long story longer.
Is that him?
The Fugitive and Harry O, same guy. Yeah.
Big double paycheck getter. Yep. So what happened was I decided we got to go someplace warm. I called my friend Timbo, and I said, I'm going to put a bullet in my head if we don't go someplace and just hang out for a while. It was the week before Christmas. He said, where do you want to go? I said, well, how about Las Vegas? We've never been there before.
Uh-huh.
I said, that sounds really good. So I'll rent a car. I'll pick you up tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And my cousin was 21 years old at the time, a laid-off union carpenter. I said, we'll get my buddy Drew, who writes for the Milwaukee paper. It'll be four guys going across country, having a little cheap, adventure.
Trying
country.
To perk themselves up.
Perk themselves up before Christmas. We're all losers, teetering on the brink of mediocrity. So
what better city to visit than Las Vegas?
Las Vegas.
You do feel better
you can't
about yourself.
Lose.
Nothing bad ever goes around
You'll be
there.
Fine.
So against Milwaukee, everything looks good. So while I was renting the car and picking up my cousin, my best friend Timbo was robbing the bank that he used to work at.
But I'm not defending him, Dobie, but
you go right ahead, Bill.
You need some cash roll if you're going to Las Vegas. You need some money to spend.
Have you ever heard of a credit card? They have a cash advance.
All right, do things the old-fashioned way.
I'm old school. I grew up in Wisconsin.
I know this is all in the book, Monkey in the Middle, and you've piqued my curiosity.
Go right
ahead. I have to read it, and we'll tell you where to find it and where to see Dobie Maxwell. But... So when did you find out that he robbed the bank?
That's the thing, Wendy. It was almost a year later. He had $105,000 of stolen bank money in my rental car in my name because I was the only one that had a credit card. We drove from Milwaukee to Las Vegas, spent about 4 days in Vegas, drove all the way back, and he didn't tell me for almost a year.
Did he at least treat you to
No,
everything?
He didn't act like he had any money. There's a lot of weird things that went on out there.
But when you're playing nickel slots and he's at the $10,000 Baccarat table, don't you say, something happened to Timbo that I'm not aware of?
His luck must have turned around
I guess
somehow.
It did.
The fickle finger of fate pointed upward at my friend Timbo.
I guess
no, he didn't act like he had any money. Now, looking back on it, he did get himself a safety deposit box. I said, why do you need that? I got my dad's watch. It's kind of nice. It was like $100 Timex.
Oh.
I don't know. It was weird then, but all the things when he told me almost a year later. See, he bought a no money down real estate course on TV.
Yeah.
And he bought a house that we were living in, which was horrible. And then he bought a couple more houses. I was a road comedian, so I didn't need a nice place to stay. Well, he bought those with stolen bank money.
Yeah.
So he called me up and said, I just did a 10-hour drive back from some gig. He calls me. It's midnight. Hey, we got to talk. So talk. I don't want to talk on the phone. So come over. I don't want to come there. You come here. So I just drove for 10 hours. We'll have lunch tomorrow. I have to tell you something. It's the most important thing I've ever had to tell you.
Yeah.
He's my best friend. So I said, okay. So I drove over to his house, walked in. Oh, the kids are still up. We got to go outside. It was like cloak and dagger. What are you doing? It took me in the middle of a bridge and said, remember on the way to Vegas, I told you the bank I used to work at got robbed?
Yeah.
Now, he did tell me that because it was on the police scanner. His mother had a police scanner since we were kids. Didn't I said, you know who did it, don't you? He goes, yes, I do. What do you think I should do? I said, easy. Wash your hands of it. Turn them in. Get the reward money. And I can't do that. I said, why not? He goes, because it was me. And I said, you got me off the couch after a 10-hour car ride.
Mess with me.
I'm not kidding. And I knew he wasn't kidding. He was my best friend. I'm thinking, okay, there's going to be SWAT teams. Starsky and Hutch are going to be at the house. Helicopters. It's going to be horrible.
And why did he tell you?
Because the FBI was coming down on hard on him, Bill, and he said he was the head of security. They fired the whole staff at the bank to bring in the $6 an hour rent to cops.
Yeah.
And he said, someone is going to rob this bank. He goes, I kept telling the bank president, someone is going to rob this bank. And then I got to thinking, well, if someone was going to do it, how would they do it? And yeah. I was making my rounds in my lame duck period before I got fired. I thought, well, if I was going to do it, how would I do it? I said, well, it's easy. I'd go here. I'd get a key made. I'd be there at the right time. And I was waiting for a sign from God as to when to do it. And my best buddy calls up and said, let's go to Vegas tomorrow. That was my sign from God. I said, now I'm Jimmy Swaggart giving you signs from above. So he said, and the FBI's coming down on me very hard. And
well, it's your fault, obviously.
Yeah,
it's
obviously my fault.
It's all your fault.
My fault.
What's wrong with you?
You came up with a perfect plan.
Perfect plan. And he said, I would have hated myself if I did. I would have hated myself if I didn't. I thought I'd get about $5,000 or $10,000. My mom wasn't doing well. I'd give her a little bit of money, donate some to charity. I wanted to teach the bank president a lesson.
Yeah.
But then he said, when I got in there, it was the week before Christmas. There was cash. And I filled my duffel bag. I got another one. I could barely walk out of there. He got $105,000 that... Now it's not so much a cash society, but back then it was. He said, I couldn't walk with all that money. It was $105,000. And he goes, well, I was a little bit late because I was counting it. Then you wanted to go to Vegas. And then, oh, there's a lot of twists and turns that are in the book. And it's like, I can't believe it's not a movie. There's going to be two Wayans brothers and Carmen Electra in the movie.
That's a movie.
You is just Carmen Electra playing you?
Yes, maybe.
I hope. I would love to see that.
So did he think he was going to get away with it? That's all I want to know.
The first time he did. And that he did it again. I want you to know that.
Sure. Yeah. Something works.
Because you know what?
It.
It's like the monkey see, monkey do.
That's the sequel to Monkey in the Middle.
That's exactly right.
Toby Maxwell's book. There's a book launch at Zanies in Chicago tonight. Zanies.com has the information. We'll talk more to Dobie. Believe it or not, that's the happiest story he's got in the book. There's other stuff you're not going to believe. I know.
You're going to have to hug him. He thinks you're more beautiful than ever before, so all right, hug him hard.
Maybe there will be a hug at some point. Dobie Maxwell's here at Seth Spill and Wendy WGN. It's the sad Brady Bunch music. Remember when something sad would happen on the Brady Bunch?
Sam the Butcher would saw off a limb.
Right. They would play the sad Brady Bunch background music.
There was also that wah, wah.
Yeah, you get that sometimes.
Yeah, I forgot it now.
That's always fun. You should have that as your ringtone, Dobie.
Oh, thank
you,
Bill.
Dobie Maxwell's here. He's a comedian. He's an actor. He's got a new book out called Monkey in the Middle. There's a book launch at Zanies in Chicago tonight. At what time?
8:30.
Go see Dobie and
I went plywood. I heard.
Did you go plywood?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I sold six copies. Rick bought five of them.
Oh,
Rick Kempfer is here too. And Rick, you have something to do with this book as well.
He robbed the bank the third time.
What?
He was in a giraffe suit.
That's not right.
I'm the publisher of the book. Yes.
Yep.
Rick Kempfer. We've talked to him on our show before. He does a what is your book? The father one.
Father Knows Nothing.
Yes. Love it. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Dobie, you have named yourself, ironically, Mr. Lucky.
I have not named myself. My grandpa told me that.
Did your grandfather call you Mr.
He
Lucky?
Apparently, it was a TV show in the early 60s.
It was.
That I did not know about. And he said things that I can't quote it on the radio. It's the first line in the book. And I can't figure a way to clean it up for the radio. But he's talking about, he says, you have such horrible luck. My dad was a biker. It's really true. His son.
Yeah.
He said, I wanted to be a good father. Your dad was in outlaws. He said, I couldn't do anything about it. My mom was a drug abuser. She left us. I was 5 months old. She said, my grandpa said, I felt I owed you something to try. You were going to send me to an orphanage. I couldn't let you go because I didn't know where you'd end up.
Yeah.
Because you've had bad luck your whole life right out of the shop.
Out of the womb.
Out of the womb. Yeah, so he said, I really felt that. So my grandpa, he's a big part of the book. He was a mentor. If it wasn't for him, I'd be dead or in jail. And I still almost ended up with him. Almost ended up both with him, with his guidance. But he said, I was a little kid. He said, that kid you're hanging out with, stay away from him. He's like your father. He's a bad seed. There's something wrong with him. I thought, that's just him. Goes, nope, he's going to get you in trouble someday.
But
Gramps was right.
You know, you can't blame him. We talked about your best friend in a bank heist or two, but you know that...
Or two.
Everybody gets one on the house. By the second one shows, this guy's a problem.
Free space on a bingo card.
Right. So
rob one, get the second one half price. Sorry.
He got away with the first one?
Yeah, he did.
I always wonder about a guy, because there's been other stories that we've heard about a guy who will rob the same place twice.
Mm-hmm.
It's because
you know
pulled
it
off. Yeah.
Well, now you're tempting the fates. Okay, you won the lottery. Now, buy the same numbers next week and see if you win it again.
Right.
It's probably not going to come in.
It's dangerous. But you don't blame everything in your life on what happened with Tim, certainly. You're just somebody. You seem to have a gray cloud hanging over you.
For whatever reason. Wrong place, wrong time. I'm the only person I know that has run out of gas in a car wash. You know, it's the worst case scenario, plus a twist or a glitch or a wrinkle. And people that know offstage said, you know, I thought it was a gimmick on stage, but I know you, man. There are so many things that just only happen to you.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, so you might as well make it funny, because nothing is happier than knowing someone else is doing worse than you.
That's why we watch Maury Povich and Jerry Springer.
I am a walking version of that. And it's surprising. I haven't put a bullet in my head. And I'm not feeling sorry for myself. It's just that's the way it worked out. And I was born. Today's my birthday. Okay.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
I was missed literally Friday the 13th by a day and the Ides of March.
Yep.
That's my whole life. Is that you were walking through that precipice the whole time, tiptoe through the tulips of the netherworld.
You know, I've known you a long time. How do you smile so much with all this?
What can
stuff?
You do? Wendy, you know what I'm saying? I just
give
got
up.
Back.
I would curl into a fetal position and give up.
I thought about it. Now, my siblings and I, we haven't talked. My sister and I didn't talk in 20 years. I have a half brother. We didn't talk in 30 years. And my older brother had a stroke. And we'd be getting together after all this time. And he's in care up in a nursing home in Wisconsin. And just this past weekend, we got together. And the first time in 30 years we got together was last year on my birthday.
Jeez.
And we've been getting together and staying in touch. And it's like all that evil. Our parents were just bad seeds. They never should have had kids. And we're now starting to deal with it in this late in the game. And it's healing. It's awesome. And I know there's people listening that have had that too. And people come up to me after shows. It's like, you made me laugh. My son died and I needed to laugh. And it's a mission. Bill, you're a comic. You know what it's like. And friends, it really is. And it's something that I was born to do this, and that's what I'm going to do.
But isn't it strange with the family squabbles you've had with a horrible, horrible car accident years ago,
mm-hmm.
with some bad business ventures?
that
your normal job.
What is not in this book?
A happy ending. No, it does have happy ending. Just, you guys are in it. I was on the.
That'll be the end of the book.
I'm on
today.
Your show, yes.
We're turning your life around. Without going into great detail, do you want to talk either about the car accident? We only have a minute or two, but the car accident almost took your life.
My 30th birthday, I bought a convertible. I grew up in Wisconsin. What a dummy. I wanted a convertible. Sure hope summer's on a weekend this year. And I flipped it over a Mustang, and I flipped over a convertible, and I hit a mailbox upside down. I broke my sternum twice and my jaw. I couldn't walk.
You hit some power wires or
power wires.
Right?
Some drunk driver hit an electric light pole and grazed it, then knocked it out of the socket, knocked it at an angle, and there were live electric power lines 3 feet off the ground in Milwaukee, in the worst part of Milwaukee. And the cop said, it happened 30 seconds before you got there.
Oh,
he
goes,
no. He set it up for you.
Time. He set it up for it. So it flipped my underneath my front tire and bumper and flipped the car upside down.
Oh, my
God. And it's
God.
One of those things where, and the cops comes up to the hospital and says, you're lucky. I know this. He says, you could have easily died in there. We had to get the jaws of life. And people are coming out. He's dead. He's dead.
You're hearing this?
I'm hearing this at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I heard someone, I swear to you, said, if he's dead, get his wallet for ID purposes only.
It was your friend who robbed the banks.
Exactly right. But I think, seriously, I know this sounds weird, but when I was upside down, not knowing if I was going to live or die, the first thing I thought in my mind was, what's funny about this?
Right.
And I know that sounds corny and Tony Robbins and Wayne Dyer and all that kind of stuff, but I think if you really look at stuff that's funny in your life, you know, comics have a callus on our soul. How many, you know, you have to get ahead of that. So if it wasn't for comedy, I would have put a bullet in my head. And I'm not saying I'm normal and happy and well-adjusted all the time, but it gives you something, a perspective.
But don't you think, I learned this in college. I was studying screenwriting, and they told us that every good story, if a story is going to be good, it has to have conflict.
Oh, man.
You've had some conflict.
I got about 4 movies in here.
At least.
Bruce Willis, Stallone could be in this. Tyler Perry. Everybody good.
Everybody.
All the good ones.
All the greats.
Toby Maxwell, he will be doing a book launch at Zany's Chicago tonight.
Unless there's an earthquake.
There could be.
See, but now that's so scary to me. What if there's a pop-up Trump rally and all of a sudden everything's canceled?
Yes, Trump will be endorsing my next book.
I feel on today your birthday, and I wish I would have known it was your birthday.
It's okay.
After hearing this story, we've got to get him a horseshoe and stick it somewhere.
Because you've never had a horseshoe stuck somewhere?
Get in line. Take a number.
You need some help.
I do need help. It's your turnaround. The thing with my siblings getting back together has been the story of my life. It's great. It's turned everything around. And I think to sit and talk to people, I told Jeff Foxworthy he was an idiot, that his redneck thing would never,
that'll
ever
never work.
And it's in the book, too. And he laughed at me, and he said, I'm going to make $1 million. And I got it right in his face, $1 million, $1 million. And, you know, I told him later, I said, I had to go through the things I had to go through to learn how to – you had to learn how to be successful, and you were.
Right.
And it's the way it is, man. I'm never going to be young and cute anymore. So now the pressure's off. I can come in and have fun. and have a good time. People say, wow, you're so funny. How come I never heard of you before? Because I was trying to stay out of prison for defending my best friend. The whole thing is your best friend. What if Carla would have done that to you and put you in a situation where you had to turn her in or go to jail yourself?
See, that's what the weird thing is.
Yeah.
Talk about conflict. I know, you know, just to come within yourself and go, what do I do here? Mm-hmm. This is my best childhood friend, the only one that I really connected with.
And it's you or her.
Well, you got to go for yourself.
Yes, but
it's weird,
you do.
But it's weird because you had all this bad luck going on. It's weird you did go for yourself. That right there says a little bit of hope for yourself.
Well, thanks.
In your heart.
It was tough.
And turned it around.
And there's balance in the universe. I know this for sure. If you have so many bad things happen to you, at some point there's a law of averages that says good stuff will happen too, right?
I am a finalist in the $10 million Publishers Clearinghouse Sweepstakes.
How about that?
Me and R. Brumbelow.
How about that? You're going to take R. Brumbelow down.
I'm getting that money, Jack.
Toby Maxwell.
So nice to see you
thanks,
again.
You guys. I really appreciate it.
Oh, we're glad to have you. The new book is called Monkey in the Middle. It comes out today.
A must
read. You must read this book. There's a big book launch at Zanies tonight in Chicago. Zanies.com has all the information. Good luck with everything.
Oh, thank you. It hasn't happened until now, so we'll
it'll happen
around.
Starting today.
I'm betting on a horse.
Law of averages, as you said,
right.
Bill.
It'll balance
term.
Out. It'll
it's
always
the year
does.
Of the Dobie.
It's the year of the
it's
Dobie.
It's the Chinese year of the monkey, too, by the way. That's why we were I'm not on that.
Perfect. Perfect timing.
It's turning around.
A break. Kim Gordon has the news for you. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's WGN. Thank you, Kim. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And we are joined right now by the feisty yet incorrigible Tribune columnist Eric Zorn.
Why do you get two?
Well, last week, Wendy, you said that you thought that feisty worked for me so
that
well
was the
that,
keeper.
That we would just keep it. And then I
so
thought,
now you're going to keep adding, so ultimately it's going to be like a big wang dang doodle, chitty chitty bang bang. You're just going to keep going?
Exactly. Chitty chitty bang bang, your fine four-fendered friend.
Oh, very nice. Very nicely done.
So,
tell us something incorrigible you've done of late. What's an incorrigible act of yours?
Well, I mean, if I told you, then...
Then you would
might,
not
it,
be...
It, then it would be... I would be indiscreet, and that would be another adjective you'd have to add to me, so...
Right.
But
we were talking at the beginning of the show about the events of the weekend, Eric, the Trump rally that wasn't... I imagine you have a thought or two about what went on.
Oh, yeah, I do. I really do. I missed it. I was Johanna had it over there. My wife, she wanted to see what was going on, but I had...
Did she go to it?
She didn't get inside. She went to sort of... She wanted to contribute to the volume of people outside.
Yeah.
And then she left before all hell broke loose. But
why did she leave?
A little bit
curious.
Of hell broke loose, I should say. Well, she and I had some other engagement.
Okay, so she was just kind of checking out the scene.
She was checking out the scene, and she wanted to be there and see what was going on. But, no, I mean, I my thought is that this story worked out really well for Donald Trump. That, you know, in Chicago, where this is a for a liberal, democratic city, this was seen as a victory for the protesters. We shut him down, we silenced him, and so on. I think around the country, among Republican primary voters, the idea that Donald Trump couldn't hold a rally in the city because all these young ethnic protesters were shouting him down, I think it plays really well to his base. And it
his
plays,
rights to freedom of speech were infringed upon.
Totally violated.
Yeah. His rights. And of course, you know, the Constitution really doesn't come into play literally, obviously, because the First Amendment has to do with what the government can do to your freedom of speech. But the spirit of the First Amendment says that you have a right to speak and the people who want to hear you have a right to hear you. And that these protesters were threatening that sort of what I would call a social right. And this, I think this plays really well in terms of how this is seen by his supporters and people who are thinking about supporting him, which is that this guy is speaking such righteous truth, they're thinking, that these young people can't stand to hear him speak. And they're shutting him down, they're silencing him, and he is a martyr. And that's really what I worry about with this situation, is that when you go and you exhibit your solidarity and your objection to him by gathering outside the arena, but even by going inside and holding up signs, but clearly the object of these protesters was to shut down the rally. They were going to disrupt it as often as they could.
Do you think they meant to shut it down or just to show, hey, we don't like this
dude?
There
was a lot of glee that I saw reported after them. event was canceled. You know, we stopped Trump and you know, na-na, hey-hey, goodbye, and so on. That there was a lot of a sense that they had silenced him. And, you know, as repugnant as his message is to a lot of us, I do think that you run the risk of looking like you're putting your heel on him in some way. And like I said, making him a martyr. And that was when I was seeing this coverage and seeing it, you know, watching it play out over the weekend on the national media, that's the kind of thing that I was seeing, which was that, you know, these rallies are getting increasingly, you know, what would be the word, you know, violent,
violent,
but they're volatile. At least volatile. And my guess is that what Trump people thought when they scheduled this rally at the UIC, I mean, for goodness sake, what an odd place in the middle, you know, in a very diverse campus,
right,
in the middle of a very diverse campus, in a very diverse city, a Democratic city, to schedule this rally for this polarizing Republican figure. I got the feeling that they were kind of hoping that this would turn into a spectacle that would reflect well on Trump. Some of the developments then, as the week went on, before that, with the guy who cold-cocked the African-American man at a different Trump rally.
Yeah.
Things were getting more and more out of hand. I think Trump saw this, and he saw the number of people who had gone into the arena. The tickets were sold. I don't know how they were passing them out free. You could just go to Eventbrite and get tickets.
Yeah,
there was no sense of control trying to paper the house with Trump supporters. So this was going to be a really rowdy event. And I think that the fear was that Trump supporters were going to lash out violently. I think the actual fear was not that the protesters were going to get violent with the Trump people, but that the Trump people were going to get violent back.
Can you put some headphones on? Because Jim was at the rally, and he might want to address what you just said. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
You were at the rally?
Yeah. And what I saw was these anti-Trump protesters were out of control, swearing at people who they didn't agree with. There was no engagement of conversation. I saw an attempt to engage in, you know, a political conversation with the Trump people, but that was not reciprocated on the other side. They were yelling, spitting. I saw one guy just because he had, you know, he was talking to people. He got maced right in the face. And, you know, the reporters, you know where the reporters were during this whole time? When, like, Trump people were getting backed into a corner? They were hiding behind the Trump people. And I'm talking about NBC Chicago. I saw a woman hide behind. I mean, there were all these reporters hiding with the under the relative safety behind the Trump supporters. They didn't want to go in the crowd of the anti-Trump supporter or anti-Trump protesters.
Now, I wasn't there, but I thought that the reporters were, like, kept in a bullpen inside the...
They had no reason to be, because they could have freely walked out, like I saw a few did, but they didn't want to go out where these anti-Trump protesters were, because some of them devolved into attacking people right out on the street because they had a Trump hat on.
But I want to say something too, Jim. Jim, this was never going to be...
I didn't believe what the media would tell me, and I'm glad I did. Because I saw what I saw was Trump people being civil and being, like, verbally attacked to the point where, like, in your face, till there's a crowd surrounding someone, till eventually, like, someone spit on you or, you know, mace you. I'm not saying all the protesters are out of control, but most of them were, and they didn't even really understand their protest, which is kind of funny.
Now, Jim, do you
really didn't want to interested in what other people thought.
This was never going to be a peaceful rally.
Racist. Well, right. Why did they go? And you know what? I walked through the line beforehand, and I was like, I can't believe they're holding this event. I knew half of these people going in were going to protest, or not even protest, to act violent. And then they said they were on tape beforehand. I mean, it was pretty obvious what was going to happen, and I knew that was going to happen. And I don't think those protesters did themselves a favor. I think they showed the world how open-minded they are to other people's thoughts.
But their argument would say that Trump supporters do not have their finger on the pulse of what's going on either.
Well,
that's what the protest is.
So the conversations I saw, it seemed like they were the Trump people were the informed people. And the anti-protesters weren't even interested in hearing the other side of the story.
Jim, this is
swearing and, you know, and just calling people, like, accusing people names. Race, go home. Large groups of people surrounding, like, old ladies, like, scaring them. And it was like, it was a joke. It was a shame.
Well,
is what I thought.
Well, Jim, do you
not proud of it?
Jim, do you think? I mean, my analysis is that this is the story that's going, that certainly will animate Republican base voters and potential Trump supporters, that this story.
Well, you know what they're going to say? We're not going to have our voices shut down, especially when these people think this is what the brown shirts used to do when Hitler came to rise to power, was shut down opposing political rallies.
They did not shut anything down, Jim.
They absolutely did shut it down.
They were protesting.
It was shut. It wasn't you know, there's a point where protesting and then screaming in someone's face, and then with a large group of people and some people getting away with, you know, actually committing like an assault on these people. I saw a guy gets, you know, he's giving his point of view. Eventually, like, you know, there's tons of people surrounding him, yelling at him, swearing at him, not even giving him a chance to talk. And eventually they just squirt him in the eyes with pepper spray. And I saw reporters right near there watching that. They didn't do anything to report that. Of course, they were, like I said, they were hiding behind the relative safety of the only people who were acting civil.
See, Jim,
and that
I think,
was not the streets. That was not in the crowd.
I think that Jim's account, what you're hearing from Jim, is what is the story that is being told, and is the understanding of this event around the country right now, in especially in pockets of Republican voters, which is like, hey, this Democratic Party wouldn't let Donald Trump speak. And
if not Donald Trump speak, they wouldn't let anybody speak of opposing.
Well, just like Donald Trump, who doesn't let anyone speak.
Yeah, there's
Jim.
Some levels of irony there.
Jim, Donald
it
Trump.
It was met with a cordial conversation. It was met with shouts, screams.
Exactly like Donald Trump does.
Actually, no, I never saw any Donald Trump people acting out of control. And I'm not like taking Donald Trump's side. I'm going to vote for Ted Cruz. I think Donald Trump is actually a plant for Hillary Clinton just to get his nugget. It's very high.
Well, there's another level.
I mean, Hillary Clinton has now got a chance to win because Donald Trump's negatives are so high. But here's the point, is Donald Trump's people, or the people who are going to see him, were acting civil. I studied this because I heard all the, you know, whatever before, and I knew what, like, to expect, and I knew what they were going to try to tell us, and it just didn't,
Jim, what about that Trump supporter? Jim, what about that Trump supporter who punched a protester? Is that civil?
Yeah, I mean, no, that's not civil. But they did. The guy, these people go into the arenas. They give finger. They instigate. Eventually, they get in your face, and then someone from behind maybe pops you. I don't know. But if you saw the floor and the tape of that, it looked like it was all planned. And you know what? When I saw that line outside that door, I was like, this thing is a joke. How do they not know what's going to happen?
Hey, Jim,
knew what was going to happen.
We got
to
take a break, but thank you for your input, and we appreciate
calling. Really interesting.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
All right, there's opposing viewpoints, of course, on the phone lines.
Really?
And the text. Yeah, you'd be shocked
on
to
this
learn
subject?
This. Yes, yes. 312-981-7200. Different people saw different things on Friday. We'll get to that next. It's Bill and Wendy, along with Eric Zorn on WGN. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Tribune columnist Eric Zorn is with us as well. Chicago certainly has a history of having interesting nights in politics. This past Friday night was one of them, as the Donald Trump rally is canceled at the last minute. I have to tell you, very, very strangely, and we have a lot of calls, so we'll get to those. On Friday, I was walking back. I was at Marina Tower and then walking back here to Tribune Tower, and I took Lower Wacker, and I was right by the underfloor of Trump Tower, and there were four guys wearing tuxedos looking very kind of sad. They all had the same kind of sad look on their face. And I said, hey, guys, as I was walking past, and I had no idea what was going on, was Trump staying at Trump Tower? Could they have either just had some contact with him moments ago, or were they awaiting him? Do we know if he was staying there?
I'm guessing that he stayed there. I know that
he'd get a good rate.
A group of protesters came over to the tower, Trump Tower, after the event at UIC was canceled, a smaller contingent of them, and they were controlling access to that building. So.
Oh, they were.
So I'm guessing he stayed there.
Because that's more than likely the entrance he would take. It's the Lower Wacker entrance. Nobody even knows it's there.
He may stay at La Quinta, though.
Maybe. He's saving money. You know? Yeah, maybe. All right, 312-981-7200 is our phone line and our text line. Let's get your thoughts on what went on Friday.
And we had listener Jim who called in, who was not a Trump supporter per se. He said he's voting for Ted Cruz, but he wanted to go check it out, and he said the protesters were the problem.
Yeah.
Bob, you disagree with that caller, Jim?
Well, yeah, actually, I was for Trump in the very beginning. I liked his ideas because they bordered my own, not all of them, of course. But then when I started researching him, I realized he really didn't have a solid logical plan for correcting any of the problems. Everything was, well, I'll get it done. Everybody likes me and blah, blah, blah. But I was thinking when Jim was talking that I think it also could energize the anti-Trump people, because they figure that same thing. They're trying to, you know, we want him out of there because whatever thought they might have, for instance, he's a racist or we don't like. So now we see these the pro-Trump people are going to protect him, and I better get out and vote or he's going to get, because he has a rock solid core. It's kind of a quasi-coalition. You've got angry people, like all of us are by government and so forth and always have been. You've got people who have either lost jobs or they don't feel they're getting promoted or have jobs that pay well. And you have the racist group. And there is a racist group. Now, all these people have an agenda. And they see Trump as the savior. And they figure if he's not allowed to get the message out, we feel he's going to win the presidency. And if he can't get his message out, he won't win it, and then we are lost. Our savior is gone. I mean, I was just checking the some of the groups that support. Of course, you all know about David Duke,
right?
And some things he said. But then there's
we know who he is, but Trump doesn't seem to remember who he is. But
I don't know who this David Duke guy is.
Yeah, even though he's
but he loves me
several times over the years.
All right, get to your point, Bob. I hate to hurry you up, but we have to hurry you up.
Well, what I'm saying is there's Jared Taylor, there's Michael Hill, there's all kinds of white supremacts that are on record as saying. In fact, one fellow, this will scare you to death. His name is Jim Shirley from Alabama. He said he hopes that Trump will win and issue licenses. Get this, to hunt the undocumented immigrants. And offer a $50 bounty for confirmed kill.
All right. Well, Bob,
that's a bad idea.
Thank you very much for calling
in. How so, Eric? Please explain yourself.
What could go wrong?
Please explain yourself. By the way, this is a tweet from Donald Trump because there were allegations that Bernie Sanders has stirred his supporters up to disrupting Trump's rallies. So this is a tweet from Donald Trump yesterday. Bernie Sanders is lying when he says his disruptors aren't told to go to my events. Be careful, Bernie, or my supporters will go to yours.
Yeah.
That's what scares me more than anything is where we are now and where we could be in a couple of weeks or months.
We just don't have a real tradition in this country of political speech being drowned out, especially in political campaigns where a candidate cannot speak, feels that he cannot speak.
Right.
And I think this is why this whole idea of Trump as martyr is being pushed forward, and why it's scary to me, because it does. I think it animates people who were inclined to vote for Trump or were thinking about it, but now they think, well, this guy must really have something to say because these other people are so intent on keeping him quiet and making sure that I don't get to hear him. And I just think that, you know, part of our culture is that people are allowed to speak their mind and then you're allowed to yell and scream about it yourself. But the idea that I'm going to drown you out, I'm not going to let you express your viewpoint, I think is un-American.
And who started that? In your opinion, because that's what Trump is
to
me.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that Trump is a hero. I'm not saying that Trump is this
right.
hero. I'm saying that this is the pose that he's allowing.
I wasn't
strike.
Attacking you, but I'm right. just pointing out that he's the one, because someone just texted 815. That's exactly what's wrong with this country and why we're so divided. No one wants to listen to anyone else's ideas or beliefs. Such an arrogance in this country to not be so proud of. I used to serve this country in the service, and it was so patriotic. This circus is shameful. But who's listening to anyone else when Donald Trump speaks? It's like my way or the highway kind of thing. Get him out of here. He, in my opinion, is just bringing this to the forefront so his supporters will be like that. No one's going to have a peaceful talk at a rally, at a Donald Trump rally, because he's not peaceful.
Right. And he's also expressed some reservations about freedom of the press. I mean, he's talking about, well, we'll see what ways we can shut down some of the criticism and so on. I mean,
He should have showed up and tried to bring both sides together, and, you know, he wussed out.
Everybody hold hands now.
Kumbaya moment with Donald Trump.
Is this the moment where we should be scared, or should we have already been scared weeks or months ago?
I don't think quite yet.
Not
but
yet.
We're getting there. Let's see how the elections go. We didn't even get to talk about it.
Vote
the
tomorrow.
Elections tomorrow. The results are going to be really important.
Did Eric tell you that he called the protest problem?
Did you?
In the Mincing Rascals, we recorded it Friday morning, and he said, I really think something's going to happen here Friday night.
Yeah.
Chicago is not Trump country, is what I said.
Go to WGNplus.com to listen to that. I kind of am fearing for Trump's life, if you want to know the truth.
Oh, dear.
I mean, really.
sort of like George Wallace, that kind of
situation? I don't know.
I think they're much better protected now than they used to be.
Getting a bad vibe.
Were there metal detectors at that rally? Were they checking people as they came in?
I think Friday,
there is at a school, so at UIC probably has it.
I would certainly hope so.
That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Read him whenever you get the chance. Thank you, Eric. We appreciate it. We'll talk to Steve Bertrand next, find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
No incidents or accidents.
Not today. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. It's part two of our program. 312-981-7200 is our phone number.
I got spring fever, and you can't stop it.
No one can stop it. It's too strong. It's too strong to stop. Are you following the story that's going on over at Kellogg's? Kellogg's has a terrible, terrible problem on their hands, and it's really not their fault. There's a video circulating of a Kellogg's employee. I'm going to guess disgruntled, although it doesn't say... He's not described that way, but when I tell you what he did, or I guess legally we have to say allegedly did, even though it's on videotape.
Yeah, I don't get that whole thing.
You will agree with me that he seems
innocent
to be
until proven guilty, I guess.
Right.
Even if you've seen him do it.
Right. Here is the story. Feel free to make the same grimacy face that I made when I heard the story. And if you're having, by the way, if you're having lunch, move your lunch aside. If you're having breakfast cereal right now, don't eat any for a little bit.
If you're having a particular item,
right,
I wouldn't eat it.
A disturbing video has surfaced showing a man urinating in the food production line at the Kellogg's facility where Rice Krispies and other products are made.
He put the pee in Rice Krispie.
The video surfaced on Friday, but the incident allegedly happened 2 years ago at the Kellogg's plant in Memphis. This according to WREG. It's a CBS affiliate. At the time, the company and its employees were locked in a bitter labor dispute. And what better way to bring the two parties closer together
than to relieve yourself
on the product?
Oh, my God.
The man in the video has not been publicly identified, which leads me to believe that privately he has been. And that's what you see, his privates. We're outraged and disgusted, the company repeated on Twitter in response to the people who have seen the video. Internal and criminal investigations are underway. We'll post more info as it's available. The company has also been responding to people on Facebook saying that it intends to prosecute to the fullest extent of the law. You have to. Kellogg said that the potentially contaminated products included Rice Krispies.
All right.
Rice Krispie Treats.
Just bought a few boxes of those over the course of the last couple of years.
I was just going to say, keep in mind,
we're going back.
Well, they couldn't recall. They didn't know.
Well, they
didn't know. Granola clusters.
Yes.
And other puffed rice products.
I only like my rice puffed.
That's the best way. However, because of the time that's elapsed since the incident, the items would all be past their expiration date. And
passed through your system.
Yes.
Darn it.
It's their polite way of saying, we wish we knew at the time, but we didn't. But at this point, it's too late. All we can do is try to prosecute the guy. But honestly,
I'm sure this isn't the first time it's happened. And
I'm positive it's not.
I hate to say this, but every time I eat canned soup, I think about it for a minute.
Why just canned soup? What is it
about
canned soup?
Canned soup, especially like chicken noodle.
Yeah.
What? Resembles something.
Oh, you're going by resembling? Oh. I have to say, and I'm not saying how lucky I am, but I'm not, like, Rice Krispies aren't my cereal of choice. I would be more disturbed if this was your Frosted Flakes or your Apple Jacks.
I'm more troubled the fact that every time Wendy has canned soup, that's what she thinks.
Yeah,
of.
That's troubling too.
I'm sorry, but that's it runs through too. My mind for a second almost every time I open up a can of soup. Because I don't trust anyone.
Right.
You won't eat my food, but
right.
Look what's happening here. When you have kids and you pack their lunches all the time for the last few years, you get a big box of Rice Krispie Treats to throw in there.
Sure.
And every holiday, who doesn't have Rice Krispie Treats made at the family Christmas gathering?
Yeah. Right. That's
so we
true.
Are all infected.
Luckily, we're not all infected, and you don't like to think of a man doing this. I don't even like milk on my cereal, Wendy. How would I feel about this? This is one step way further that would make me very, very uncomfortable. I think I've told you this story before. There was a kid in my high school who, I'm trying to think of how to say this politically correctly. He was regularly ostracized by other kids in high school. I never made fun of him. I was always very nice to him. There was no reason for me. I wasn't much. I wasn't the kind of kid who made fun of people back then. Now I do it professionally, but back then it was amateur work.
You were nice back then.
I was very nice back then. So I was always very polite to this kid. But other kids at the school frequently would rip on this kid. That was like a normal thing.
For a particular
sadly.
Reason?
He was very different. He was very, very different. Years later, I ran into him in Oak Forest, and I said hello, and he said hello, and we talked. And at the time, he worked. There was a local pizza place that was very, very popular, and he worked there. And he said, "You were one of the only people that when they ordered pizza from me, I didn't give them extra ingredients." And I just smiled and then walked away going, "Oh, my God, how frightening is that? Extra ingredients.
And you won't eat my food."
I think that led to my fear of eating your food.
I think that was the
touchstone. I think that's what put my fear of eating your food in place.
So while it's still cold, we need a little colder, but you need to go to an L stop during a cold winter day and watch people's breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they exhale, the cloud.
Yeah.
How far and how many people's faces it crosses.
Oh, I know.
Right?
I know.
So really, we eat and breathe stuff like
oh,
this.
Oh, there's
all
germs
the time.
Everywhere. How
and
many
we're
people.
Fine.
Think about it. You pump gas. You go to the gas station, you pump gas, and how few people wash their hands or anything. Or the grocery store is another one. They always test, like, what's on a grocery store.
That's why they have the wipes now.
They have the wipes, but what percentage of people use them? I see them there, but I see very few people using them.
Or I lick the loaves of French bread in the
right.
store, and I've never gotten
Stop
sick.
Stop it!
Steve loves to do that.
Somebody just, yes, this weekend, I think yesterday, at the Jewel, somebody came up to me with an exposed end of the bread and pretended to lick it.
Oh, nice.
I said, that is not funny.
Nice. But you have to admit, all these examples that we're giving, from the grocery store to the gas pump to the French bread, they pale in comparison to a guy who knowingly relieves himself on the conveyor belt as your favorite breakfast cereal.
In a vat. That's
right.
When he did it, when it was getting mixed in. God knows what else goes into there. Nestle had a big recall. You heard about this?
No, what happened there?
You have to put your Corona down and avoid some cheesy microwave lasagna. So college students are in a quandary.
Yeah.
Nestle recalled nearly 3 million DiGiorno pizzas, Lean Cuisines, and Stouffer's meals because they may contain glass. In an unrelated incident, Corona recalled a small number of bottles because of glass contamination on March 10th.
Still, even with you saying that, if given the option, if I was forced to eat a product that had glass in it or somebody had relieved himself.
I'd rather go the second one. Glass can really mess you up inside. The other one, come on, didn't you see that show, that movie where they were all stuck on a, alive, I think. They ate each other and they drank that for, you know, it's pure.
I guess.
Lemonade.
I'm a refreshing drink. I'm a fussy eater. I can't condone this sort of meal. This is not good. All right, well that's
I bet
just...
it happens way more than we know. Which I hate to say. Look at that kid you said you didn't tease. And you're the only one who got a clean pizza.
I like to think I'm not the only one. No,
yeah, because he brought it up. That's true, Steve.
Well,
yeah, that's it. You're the only one I didn't do that to.
Would he have brought it up if I was one? Because I was always very, very nice to this kid. Because somewhere in the back of my head, it's like, this is the kind of guy who would do the kind of thing he actually ended up doing.
Well, now he's going to do it to you.
I hope he's moved on to a better job at this point. What if he's still working in the kitchen?
More
there?
Cheese, please.
Yeah, please. All right, a quick break. Your thoughts at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
For all the results and reaction, Tuesday night, watch primary election coverage with Mark Sapalsa and Micah Mater on WGN TV News at 9 and 10. Make sure you vote in the primary here in Illinois tomorrow.
This is a very, very unpleasant story we're sharing with you. There is video that has surfaced of a man who seems to be disgruntled with the cereal company that he works for. Why? Well, because he, in the video, is shown relieving himself on a vat of the cereal.
Maybe he just sleepwalks.
Hey, these Lucky Charms aren't so lucky after all, are they, Wendy?
Or luckier, depending on how you look at
right.
it.
Could be.
Magically delicious.
Yeah, I guess. What are your thoughts? Try not to throw up while expressing those thoughts.
Jim, you have piqued our curiosity because there's a term I think you're going to use that we'd like you to share with the listeners.
Yeah, I think it's Chinese nose blow.
What?
Guy used to, you know, hold his nose, you know, and blow out the other side.
That's a farmer's.
I've heard that referred to as a farmer's blow, is
yeah.
it not? Yeah.
I used to work with this guy years ago. He was a butcher, and he would do it almost on a daily basis to the ground meat bat.
Why did he do that, Jim? Did you ever go, why, dude, why?
You know what? He just thought it was funny, and I
hysterical.
Just, to this day, like, just, you know what, to this day, I won't eat meatloaf or hamburger.
Yeah.
That eliminates a lot of your dinners.
Right.
I don't care. I just go back to like 1972 and I picture that and I go, oh, God, no.
That's not pleasant.
I believe snot rocket was the term we were looking
That's
for.
That's what it says up on the board. And anytime it says that on our call screener, we go, we got to take that call.
Thank you, Jim, for grossing us out. I got some ground beef once from Dominic's, which is no longer around.
Right.
Not because of this.
Right.
But that's why I can say it.
Uh-huh.
I got ground beef, and I was making tacos, and as I'm pulling the ground beef apart to put in the skillet, I'm noticing white things in there. And it's not fat globules or anything like that. And I said, what is this? So I start picking it out, and I brought it back to Dominic's and said, I'm just a little concerned with what this is, and as I was picking it out, I think I realized what it was. It was the styrofoam that they must have pushed through the grinder.
Right, sure.
It's been where I thought you were going.
Way better.
I know, yeah. But still. That...
Of the options of what that could have been, that's the best one.
The woman at the checkout, she goes, oh, thank God.
Right. Believe me, that is by far the best option.
Do you know how terrible that would have been to ingest?
Yeah, but think about all the other things
styrofoam.
That could have been. Yeah.
A gross factor not as high, but, you know, health-wise, that could have... got things crazy in your intestine.
Probably.
I used to clean the meat room at an Eagle supermarket. Are Eagles still around? I don't know.
I don't know if they are. I don't think so.
I hope not after your story.
It's not really a story. It's just,
you know, see things.
You'd be a high school kid, and I was the one trusted to go in there with a power washer and, you know, spray all the sawdust and clean all the meat trays and all of that stuff. And the ground beef would get, you know, in the machine and, so you're spraying with this power wash, and it would come out just spraying all over. You had to have special clothes and everything. Really,
well, sure, because they have meat bits all over you. What was the sawdust used for?
You know, at the butcher shops, they used to put sawdust on the floors to soak up the blood and stuff. Wasn't I think that's why they had
that's,
sawdust
I think
on.
That's really? Why, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Guys would cut their hands off, you know, on the meat grinders.
Michael.
Hello. Hi, Bill and Wendy.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
You have an ugly tail for us, don't you?
It's kind of a fun one, too. Well, first off, really enjoy your show. God, I cannot go a day without listening to you guys.
Thank you, Michael.
Anyway, so, you know, you guys are talking about this story about the Rice Krispies, and it reminded me of something that used to happen when I was a teenager, later in the teenage years, like 19, you know. A buddy of mine worked at, I won't mention which one, but one of those fast food chicken places.
Yeah.
And that's the exact same thing they used to do at where they were.
The farmer's blow?
No. The urination into the batter.
I liked their biscuits.
Oh, it wasn't the biscuits, though. But here's the thing. They would only hand it out to the people that were really mean and rude to them that would come in. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what that was. But same thing. When I heard you guys talking about that, I was like, oh, my God, that's like the oldest trick in the book.
Ugh.
And the grossest one.
Bill, how often do you cook at home?
Thank you, Michael.
We don't cook at home very often.
Right, maybe
you're going to start?
Out all the time. Yeah, because, I mean, I'm sure at some point everybody has felt this. You're at a restaurant, and maybe you send something back once. I'm like, okay, if something's not quite right, I'll say. But if you ever have to send something back a second time, you go, I wonder how they're treating my food in the back of the restaurant, you know?
We went out to a restaurant with a bunch of friends for Jim's birthday one year.
Yeah.
And it was Mexican food, and he got carne asada, and it came to the table, and he said, I asked for suizo.
Yeah.
Granted, we've had a bunch of margaritas at this point.
Uh-huh.
He goes, I wanted suizo. And they said, okay, we can take it back and put the suizo on it, put cheese on it. And he goes, okay. And then all of a sudden he thought better of it as she was walking right. away with it. And you hear Jim go, no, please don't spit on it.
Oh, no.
Because you do think of that. That's why I don't send things back. I really don't.
Is that why everyone else left the restaurant?
Yes. No one left.
Yes.
Please, you're going to spit on it.
Yeah, we'll put some Sweezo on it. Stay here. We'll get you some Sweezo.
Larry, you have intrigued us. What is your story?
Well, being in sales and on the road all the time, specifically here in the Chicago and the suburbs, one of the challenges that I have, and it kind of freaks me out too, I visit, you know, restrooms on a regular basis, gas pumps. And as we know, there's so many germs and just debris on the floor in yeah. these facilities that we enter. And then we come home at night and we enter our house with our shoes on. And then we walk around our floors and carpets sometimes, not even thinking all those germs and bacteria that we pick up. And we walk around the house and I'm thinking, oh my God. So now what I do is I take off my shoes when I get in my mudroom and I take those wipes and I wipe the bottom of my shoes. Because there's a lot of just garbage that you pick up. You see guys at the gas pump pumping gas. You know, they're spitting on the ground. And God only knows if they're sick or whatever the case may be. And we just dragged it in the house. But that is an area that is just horrible. I mean, and even if you have little kids that go to the bathroom, you got to get those shoes off and yep. clean them off. It's just a gross thought. But it happens so frequently, and not a lot of people do anything about it.
It's true.
I have friends who you have to take your shoes off when you walk in their house, and I never really realized why. I thought because they had new carpeting or something, but germs. That is it. Oh, Larry, you've made us all very afraid.
Yeah, well, trust me, the amount of places that I go into, and some of them, as we all know as guys, the restrooms that we go into and gas stations or whatever else, they're not clean.
No.
They're just not.
Nope.
But you don't have a choice. You got to do it. You got to do when you got to do it.
So get a mudroom and get some handy wipes or whatever.
Amen. Thank you. Guys. Great
thank
show.
You. Thanks, oh, thank Larry. You so much.
Well, you know, I have that rule, like no outside clothes on the inside of my bed.
Right. Right.
Seriously, because like if a kid wants to come lay with you or something and I have the covers down,
yeah.
they can lay on the cover, but not inside the bed with outside clothes. Because what if you sat on a bench somewhere?
Right.
And
but this explains my aversion to eating at people's houses that have dogs and cats, because the dog and the cat is on the ground all the time, nonstop.
I don't prepare my dough on the floor.
I'm not saying you specifically, but I have seen things. I have seen people who just, you know, they're touching the dog, they're touching the food, they're touching the dog, and I can't do it.
I don't think anyone who has a dog does that, Bill.
I have seen it personally. There's people who we've been invited to, sometimes friends, sometimes relatives' houses, and I go, no, any restaurant. You pick the restaurant. I won't say to them that's the reason, but that's the reason.
Why don't you offer to bring food? Like, hey, we'll bring beef sandwiches.
I could do that. But
who knows how they've been prepared?
Yeah, I know. See, at least like with a restaurant, I like to suspend belief and imagine things are clean in the back because I can't see it.
So trust strangers more than
trust strangers
friends
more
and family.
Than friends and family. Always.
You are a twisted
I like
dude.
To believe that whatever's going on backs it. But then I hear stories like this about what happened at the cereal factory and it screws everything up.
Liquid diet from now
on. All right. A break. And then the news, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. I saw this on MSN, and it doesn't apply to me, but I think it applies to everyone else on the planet except for me. It gives you the myths and realities about surviving out in the wild. Like if something bad were to happen to you, if you were out in the wild.
I'd be dead in 30 seconds.
That's what I mean. I know I wouldn't stand a chance.
No, you're a fighter and you're very competitive and you would try for a while. I would just go, that's it. I'm doomed. It'll never work. What was that music, by the way? Because that's what you suggested Kevin play, and I'm shocked that you're...
I'm a Survivor by Destiny's Child. You didn't think I knew that song?
I never heard that song
yeah,
in
I know
my
that
life.
Song. Well, see,
are you a mix master in your spare time?
No, I'm not a blender. I'm a human being.
I'm more interested that he knows Destiny's Child.
Destiny's Child.
Right.
Sorry. Back to Bill's topic already in progress.
I hope this will save people's lives because you know what, Wendy? This is the time of year people start thinking about going out and camping in the wild. And
not
I would
me.
Do that except that they have these things now called hotels that you could go to and live like a king. So I'm not sure why people want to live out in a tent with mosquitoes and skunks when you could stay in a hotel. with bed bugs.
It's more fun. Given the option.
Right. Maybe bed bugs are way better than having a bear attack you or something.
They can go home in your suitcase. Can I ask you something? Because my parents used to camp.
Right.
Did yours?
No.
Okay. I don't know why they did, but I'm thinking there wasn't anything to do. You go horseback riding in the olden day and go camping.
Well, that's all they had back then, but now we've had
water slides and resorts.
Yeah, the world's a more fun place than it used to be. Right. I have friends who go camping, and they always want me to go camping, and I don't know what it would take for me to go camping. Would you ever want to?
A zombie apocalypse?
Even then, I still wouldn't go camping. All right, so here is the myth. The myth is that, again, if you're ever out in the wild, you have to ask yourself quickly, how am I going to survive out in the wild? You should know these. The first myth is that you could outrun a bear. Do you think you could outrun a bear? Like if a bear was going to attack you?
I can't keep up with you and Kevin when you walk to Knopf Knopf Grill.
Right. Right.
They don't ask me to go to lunch with them anymore because I walk too slowly.
Well, it's not that we don't ask you. Well,
you
I guess it is
before
that.
Right.
Yeah. Know
we
where
quickly
you've gone.
Exit out.
So I could outrun a bear. How fast do bears go?
Well, bears run fast, but they always say, because the original myth is that, you know, if a bear's coming at you, you got to try to outrun it. But you don't really need to outrun the bear. You need to outrun your friend.
You are really mean.
Think about it, though.
Seriously.
It's true.
He might be, but he's alive, too.
Right.
More and more surfacing lately at how mean and selfish you are.
If you and your family are out camping, or let's not even make it your family. Let's just say you and some friends are out camping.
A.K.A. don't go camping with Bill.
Never, ever.
It says here, it's a persistent fear in bear country. That you can see you're coming through a yellow thicket and you can't see what's on the other side, and then the bear can't smell or see you, and you clear the brush, and then boom, there's one six foot bear away from you. I'm reading this, but I don't understand the broken English. I don't know why this guy just didn't.
And what's
write
a yellow thicket?
Yellow thicket
your
is.
Your first mistake is going to the yellow thicket.
Yeah,
you shouldn't go near a yellow thicket.
This guy is describing the ugliness of if you're out in the wild and you all of a sudden look up and there's a bear looking at you. But it says here, the reality is this, no one can outrun a bear.
They can run up to 35 miles an hour.
And we cannot.
I
ever.
Bet you could.
I can't. No run, one can Forrest. Run. No one can run 35 miles an hour. It says running away from a bear is a lost cause.
You push your friend out in front of it?
I wouldn't push my friend.
How do you have friends anymore?
I wouldn't push my friend. I would just convince him or her that they should sacrifice themselves. It says Usain Bolt, that's one of your faster men on the whole planet, he couldn't beat a bear in a foot race, let alone on uneven terrain.
What about arm wrestling?
Oh, it doesn't mention arm wrestling at all. It says the best thing to do depends on the species of the bear. If you encounter a black bear, Wendy, this is why you should always have.
You mentioned this. This is your discovery.
I'm telling you, I don't know why no one's invented this, but this is something that needs to be invented, and everyone should have this laminated and in their wallet or their purse, and that is a list of animals and how to handle those animals if you encounter them in the wild. Because it says here that the way you would encounter a black bear is this. Against a black bear, you need to hold your ground and make yourself look big. Open your coat up. Throw your arms up in the air.
You want to buy a watch?
Right. Suggest that the bear buy your watch. It says if it's
open your coat.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. It says if you see a black bear, you need to shout at it and scream at it.
Hey, you, get away.
Hey, black bear, out of here.
Bear.
This has kind of happened to me before. I've seen a black bear hiking.
Where?
North.
In Wisconsin?
It was like northwestern New York, like up in the Appalachian foothills.
No.
And what'd you do?
Well, we came up around like a bend in the trail, and then there was a black bear and its kid or pup or whatever you want to call it running away from us. They're skittish.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're skittish.
They're afraid.
Well, they're not. They would protect their young, though, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Any animal.
Not if they're named Bill. They would just run.
Then I would run. Good luck, youngin. I'm out of here.
Bill
that happened to me, Kevin, in Alaska, too. We came upon a bear out in a riverbed.
Was it a black bear?
Yeah, it was a black bear.
But they're not that big, are they?
But for some of us, I don't think a black bear is huge, is it? Is a black bear 5 foot?
Oh, they can be, they can be. And this one, I couldn't tell. It was about a mile away, and we turned around.
Well, that's not close to it.
I don't want any
bear near
me.
A mile away?
We were in a car. We would have driving 55 miles an hour.
You're in a car and it's a mile away.
We could have been on it in like 3 minutes.
All right, but we're talking about if you approach it while you're walking.
Well, who would do
that? The only bear I want near me is Jay Cutler, because I know he'd screw it up at the last second and not be able to.
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming.
Really?
Is that why we're doing this topic?
No.
Just so you could slam Jay Cutler?
No. Maybe. No. All right, so it says with a black bear, what you want to do is yell and scream, because it says here, and I quote, they are as spooked as you are. I doubt that.
Well, Kevin said that. He confirmed that.
Yeah, but don't you think
that... Go try it.
No.
We'll
I'm
watch.
I'm not trying it. But it says you need to take the opposite approach with a grizzly bear.
Well, because they're big honking bears.
They are, but I can't identify how many different kinds of bears are in the world. I mean, I can tell a black bear because it's black, but
I can't tell...
A grizzly
bear has really sharp, long nails... Kind of looks like a giant porcupine, like they're, or maybe I'm thinking of a Kodiak
yeah,
bear.
Yeah, what?
Kodiak
porcupine?
Bear. That's
right,
what
that's
I mean.
That's a Kodiak bear.
Is you'd have to be well-schooled on
basically
on
any,
bear behavior.
Any bear that's not black, don't mess with it. Run away.
Good advice, Kevin. I'll camp with you, and I'll make you some pork and beans.
I don't want to pretend that I have as much experience as Kevin with bears, but I mean, Winnie the Pooh is not black.
Right.
I wouldn't mess with Winnie, though.
You
right.
Really?
Nope.
That's a honey bear. I'm not afraid of them.
He's a wuss.
It says, if you encounter a grizzly bear, avoid... Now, this is just the opposite of what you do with a black bear. The exact opposite. Avoid eye contact. A bear will perceive that to be a challenge. If the bear
will say, are you looking at me?
Are you looking at me? Are you looking at me? If the bear is not approaching, then back away slowly. If it charges you, stand your ground. If you have pepper spray...
Or a gun,
be ready to use it fast. If it makes physical contact with you, cover
start
your vitals
crying.
And play dead.
And I just use cruise control, and I put it on 55.
Cover your vitals and play dead.
And play dead.
Isn't that what you do with your wife?
We've had occasion where that's happened. But that's what I mean. Like, if my invention comes to fruition, everybody will have a card in their wallet or purse where you pull it out and you go, okay, that's a Kodiak bear. Here's what I need to do.
You don't have time.
Okay.
You got to make an app. Things have advanced.
All right. I'll work on an app.
And what woman brings a purse camping?
I've never been camping. I don't know what you do. I just know it's outside and it's not safe. I stay inside. There's never, in a hotel, there's very few bear attacks in hotels. Very few. It's much safer. All right, we have more ways for you to stay alive.
Can't wait.
Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Mostly lions and tigers and bears.
Lions?
And tigers?
And bears.
Lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
Lions and tigers and bears.
Oh, my.
Is this when Bill Left pushes Dorothy into the forest?
I would take that. If it came to that, sorry, Judy Garland, but you're going down. I respect people who go camping, and I've been invited to go camping many times, and it's taken me less than a second to say no thank you on every one of those invites.
Why do people invite you anywhere? You don't go to people's houses if they have a dog and they're going to cook, or a cat.
I go to their houses. I just don't
eat there.
I don't eat there, yeah.
And nobody calls you to go camping because you don't want to go camping.
No, I have been invited to go camping many times, and every time I try to say is let's do anything else other than go camping, because I like to believe that I will live my entire life without ever going camping. My neighbors used to camp out in their backyard all the time. They would just have
a
tent set up.
We did that as kids.
And what's in that exactly? Why would you do that?
It's fun. Our neighbors had a really long backyard, and we would put a bunch of bed sheets on their clothesline, and there would be all neighborhood kids just kind of having an outdoor overnight slumber party.
All right.
Do you like to have fun?
I love fun. I'm the king of fun. I like my fun to not be disrupted by a bear trying to eat me. Can't have it. There's a whole bunch of phone calls from people who have either had encounters or they know somebody who have had encounters with big, scary bears.
All right. Fred has encountered a grizzly bear, and those are big bears, aren't they, Fred?
Yes, they are. Some friends of mine were canoeing up in Alaska, way out in the middle of nowhere. And it came around this curve in this river, and there was a grizzly bear. You can tell they have that big hump on their back. And the bear ran up and hid behind a tree, and my friend said they were all cracking up because the tree was about maybe a foot and a half wide, and the bear was 3 feet wide. So he kept looking around the tree. he had his head and part of his body behind the tree, and he kept looking around the tree, looking at them, and then putting his head back behind the tree. He said it was the funniest thing.
That's
the bear thought he was hiding.
There's the two things about bears you need to know, Wendy. They're ferocious and they'll kill you, and the other one is they're really bad at judging sizes. Terrible at it.
That's what they say.
That's awful.
Thank you, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
All right, Harold's concurring. Grizzlies are no joke. Hi, Harold.
Yeah, they are no joke. I worked in Glacier Park 50 years ago, and one of the gentlemen that worked there the year before had gotten mauled, and he came back and saw the lady that was the manager that we worked for, and he showed us exactly what happened, and he and another guy were lucky enough that they rolled into a ball and the bear just mauled him. But his leg was where his calf was. There was no calf anymore.
Oh, my God. They have really long claws and nails. And
yeah.
Oh. Yeah, and when you go out in the wild out there, you're supposed to take and have belts so that the bears hear you coming. And if you see a bear, especially a grizzly, you don't encounter with them.
So wait,
like they said,
explain this, Harold. You wear a bell so that the bear can hear you?
You when you're hiking, you wear bells out there, and the bears will hear the bell.
Dinner's coming.
They're coming, and they're as scared of you as you are of them. But if you encounter them, a grizzly will attack.
Yep.
And a black bear will run.
Okay.
That's the difference. And like she says, they do have big claws. When I was working out there, we were walking one day, and across the valley was a mother grizzly with her two cubs, and that's what you don't want to mess with, is
right.
A bear with cubs.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Harold.
You're welcome.
You've saved a few lives, my friend.
I hope so.
Oh,
uh-oh, what happened there?
She decided not to talk to us.
I was almost attacked by Dina Bear from Channel 9 at the health club once.
She does not let go.
Nope.
Hi, no. Sue. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you? I always call you. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. Oh, that's all right.
I just had to tell you really quickly. We rented a house way up in Minnesota, I don't know, about 8 years ago. Our kids were little. And I'm really excited about it. And, of course, I did my homework about bears and all kinds of scary stuff. And I talked to the lady that was renting the house. And she's like, oh, no, you know, you don't have to worry about it. Don't worry. They're more scared of you. So I'm like, mm-hmm. You know, I grew up, you know, down in the suburbs of Chicago. I'm like,
yeah.
No, I don't think so. So we get up there. And we're hearing some noise at night. But we're thinking, oh, raccoons, whatever. It wasn't anything horrendous. We get a knock on the door about 6 a.m. And it's the guy from the house over.
Yeah.
And he's got his fishing gear on. He said, listen, we were out really early this morning, and I don't know how to tell you this, but you probably got a black bear. She's a mother with her cub. She's under your porch.
Oh, no.
And I looked at my husband, and I said, okay. And I went to my suitcase. Nobody knew I did this because I know my husband would have given me such a hard time. I pulled out bear shot the size of a fire extinguisher. I'd gotten it online from some guy whose face had been mauled off.
Oh.
And he's like, I invented this. You can shoot it 1,600 miles away. So I pull this thing out, and my husband looks at me, and the guy's like, yeah, you might not want to let your dog out until the dog doesn't sense. You know, we had our lab with us. He's a total suburban princess lab, probably and three boys. So I just looked at my husband, and I looked at this guy and said, thank you for telling us. And we called the lady and said, we want a refund, and we're out of here.
Good.
She's like, oh, no, don't worry about it. Just rattle some pans and, you know, and all. She's like, it's not your time of the month, is it? And I'm like, how did we get ourselves into this? So we got our money back, and we stayed at a hotel.
Smart move.
That's how you handle a black bear. That's how you do it.
Run away. Run away.
104 seasons. That's how I do it.
I'm with you. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Sue. That
call
myth
anytime.
That the bears are as scared of you as you are of them is always said by people who have not been attacked by bears.
Amen, bro.
Don't you think?
Yes.
I think once you had an encounter, you stop saying that phrase. All right, let's do this. Thanks, everybody, for calling and texting. Let's do this. A quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show after that. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Noted pet expert Steve Dale, by the way, coming up in about a half an hour. to talk, I'm guessing, about pets, probably. Wouldn't you imagine?
You are smart.
Probably. A couple of weeks ago, we had a guest. Mark Roberts is his name, and both you and I know Mark for many, many years. Mark was, I first met him working at Second City, and then I did stand-up with him for quite a while. And he went on to some very, very great things on television. He was the head writer for Two and a Half Men for several seasons. And then he created Mike and Molly, and now he's back in Chicago. He grew up in the suburbs here. He's back in town. He wrote a play called New Country. He wrote it, and then he stars in it. And we went to see him on Saturday. My wife and I and some friends went to see the play. And I'm very proud of him because I always knew, I mean, he's a very, very talented guy. But to write a play and act in a play is not the easiest thing in the world. And he's extremely good. And it hit me during, and by the way, if you've not seen this play, I could tell you what the play's about, but I don't think I'd be doing it justice. It's about the nation's number one country singer. And it's the night before he's about to get married. And then his family comes to what will be the wedding. They're having a wedding party, you know, the night before, like a rehearsal dinner. And it's just, it's
at
really funny. No, it's at a nice hotel. A Shoney's would have made sense, all things considered. It's at a very nice hotel. And of course, some things go wrong, as you would imagine. Very funny in parts, very sad in parts. But I highly recommend it. It's New Country. It's at the Den Theater on Milwaukee. Great, great show. But it occurred to me during the show, because the way it's set up, you know, usually when you see a play, the type of theater you see it in is called proscenium, where you're sitting in the audience and you're all looking up at what is essentially like a box. And in that box is the show. You're looking up at it like it would be a TV show or a movie, but you're in
the
audience.
The stage?
You're looking up at the stage.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's the traditional way. But in this theater, what they've done is they put the play in the middle. And then there's people
like a boxing
sitting.
Ring?
Yeah, except it's not theater in the round. You're either on the east side of the show or the west side of the show. And it makes it more intimate, kind of, you know. I mean, there were times where you could have reached out and touched one of the actors, although
really?
they frown on that.
Yeah.
They don't want you to do that. But it occurred to me that, especially in a play, I mean, I guess you have to do this with TV and movies as well, but especially when you go to see theater, you're totally giving in to the fact. I mean, I know that those guys are just actors playing roles. I'm not stupid. I get that. But for it to work, you have to totally suspend belief and pretend on all counts.
It's not that hard for other people to do this. You had the same problem with The Martian.
I did have that problem with
The
Martian.
You're there to see a show or a play or a movie.
Right.
You have to suspend belief because you're watching a show.
But there's times, admit this, you've seen bad movies or bad television shows or maybe bad plays where you lose that suspension of belief and you go, that's just a guy up there saying some stuff to a girl up there. And they're just actors playing the roles. Have you ever done that? I've done that during movies or TV shows. Go, I'm so totally out of the moment of what this is. But like with the play, that didn't happen until it was over. When it was all over and we went and talked to him afterwards, that I go, hey, yeah, it's all pretend. It's all fake. I mean, you got,
did
if
you
it's
know
working,
you were really talking to him?
I still don't know if I was really talking to him.
I know what you mean. You could really put things, but that's how you're supposed to watch everything. And if you start thinking, this is inconceivable, this couldn't happen, then you're not into
right.
it, is
right.
my only thought on that.
When I was a kid, my parents used to do plays at Theater on the Lake. You know, the you've passed by there, right?
All
right.
No, I have honestly you've have seen, no idea.
You've seen it, haven't you, Theater on the Lake? It's that theater that's right on the lake. It's on, was it on Belmont or Fullerton? I can't think of what it is. Anyway, when I was a kid and they would do plays there, I would sit and I'd watch them rehearse. And
how cool
like
is that?
Instead of, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. But instead of a door, like, you know how if you're in your house and there's a door, you go through it and you're in another room. Like there, if you were leaving a scene, it was just the outline of a door. It was the frame of a door and you'd leave it.
Are you just figuring this out?
No, but I was thinking like all that night, what a miracle it is that we don't, like every one of us, when we see a movie or a TV show or a play, you're not constantly bombarded by the idea of this is fake. Like we buy into it. When you see any movie or any play, you're going, ah, this is... For the moment, okay, those guys are really married, and that guy really shot at that guy, and that guy's very angry. You're not going, oh, some guy wrote this, some guy designed the costumes and the set. It just occurred to me, it's a miracle that anything is done, because we just sit there going, yeah, I'll buy into this, I'll play into this.
I think you've gone completely haywire.
You don't think that's a miracle that we're, like, on a daily basis, we suspend belief and watch TV shows? You watched The Walking Dead last night. You know that those are just guys dressed up in zombie outfits. But if you thought about that during the show, you'd go, this is stupid. Those guys, they're just actors pretending to be zombies.
Because I'm just entertained and enthralled by the TV.
But that proves my point. Like, if you stopped doing that, nothing would be fun anymore.
You do that all the time. In The Martian, you're like... Because you said you had a problem with the catapult thing, which...
turned out to be real.
Lucianne Wachowicz, the 13th sexiest scientist in all the land, said that that is true. I had problems believing that he was growing potatoes out of poop. Not out of, but with.
By means of.
Difficult for me to comprehend, but it didn't take me out of the movie.
I was talking to Kevin, our producer, before the show, and Kevin was saying he wants to see Batman versus Superman.
So do I.
But Ben Affleck, he goes, that's just a Boston College frat boy.
Yeah.
That's not Batman.
Yeah.
But that proves my point, is for us to enjoy anything in the arts, if it's, you know, if it's a play or a TV show or a movie, you have to totally give in to it.
Is this from the duh category today? If you look at the Mona Lisa,
right,
and you say, oh my God, that's an amazing piece of art. It's the size of a postage stamp, because I don't know how big it is. Everybody says
it's bigger than a postage stamp.
Leonardo da Vinci did this. Wow, that's... What else is there to gain out of it? I'm not pretending I am Mona Lisa.
But doesn't it amaze you that on a daily basis, if you're a fan of television or movies or plays... I never really thought about it, but afterwards I'm like, wow, we totally let ourselves be fooled for the best, for the better, you know, because without that, what joy would any of us have? But I think it's so cool that we can just let ourselves go and go, all right, I'll pretend along with these people.
I'm sorry. I guess I kind of get what you're saying, but I do that every time I watch something. I started watching Vinyl.
Yeah.
That's this great series about the 70s record scene back in New York on HBO. And I didn't put myself in there. I wish I was. I wish I was backstage with Alice Cooper and all these things.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was just like, wow, this is a great, I didn't even think about it. I just watched it and was entertained by it.
But that's what it's built to do, is to not.
I know.
But it never occurs to you how miraculous that is, that we just all, we give into that and go, all right, I'll take this ride along with you. I know you guys aren't really who you... Bobby Cannavale really doesn't have a record label, and Olivia Wilde isn't really his wife, but you weren't thinking that the whole hour you were watching it, right? You probably never came up once.
No, but I've been watching TV a long time. I know how to do it. And do you mean like plays being different or with everything?
With everything.
All right. I'm just a little confused, because do you not let yourself get into it?
No, I do. But that's the amazing aspect of it, is that we all, on a daily basis, every time we watch a TV show, you're not thinking of the mechanics of it. You're not thinking, okay, a guy wrote what he's saying right now, and he's saying
it. Oh, yeah,
I never. That's really his wife.
But this is different, too. You're a film student, so maybe you have thought of that in the past, because I never do. I'm amazed at how things get out. But I think I know what you're saying. Watching Walking Dead, my older son, Michael, said something, and it's like, can you stop talking? He goes, I had a question. I said, yeah, but you're taking me out of it. Is that what you mean?
To some extent.
All right, I don't know what
to
you
some
mean
extent.
Then. No, when you watch a TV show, Wendy, you're not watching... Some people might be watching actors portray things. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
But you're totally in. You think you're watching... You are in to the extent that you're watching people.
Right.
You're not
right.
Watching Bobby Cannavale. You're watching his character on that.
And that's what it's designed...
Show.
I loved it. Shut up, Bertrand.
That's what it's designed to do, is to, you know, for us to not think about the mechanics of what's going on behind the scenes. It's to be swept up in the moment or the magic of whatever the TV show or movie or play is. But for some reason, I was thinking about it, not till it was over, but I was like, yeah, we totally suspend belief. And even though I've known Mark Roberts for 25 years, for those 90 minutes, he was not my friend. He was...
Oh, okay. I get it now.
And you know what?
I get it.
So hard to do, and you can tell how hard it is to do when it's done badly.
Right.
Because everything we see gets to a level of where it's done well, but when it's not, then it's painfully obvious.
But that's when it occurs to me, is when something's really awful, then I'm sitting there going, why did any of these people waste their time? But when something's good, like the other night, that was the miracle of it all, is that for 90 minutes, I didn't know the guy. I didn't know anything about the guy I was watching on stage, even though realistically, I've known that guy for 25 years.
So if you see a bad movie, you should walk out saying, that shows you how hard it is to make a really
right.
good movie.
Right.
Because just the smallest thing can go wrong, and it's toast.
Yes. Yes.
Boy, I thought I think too much.
No, no one thinks that.
All right, fine. You know, I use the same joke in various stages all the time with me, Bertrand.
No, it never
and they work
old.
Every time, don't they? I know what you mean
I know it's way more analytical than it needs to be, but it is, isn't it kind of miraculous that all of our brains are willing to give in to that? Like, if we didn't have that aspect, if we weren't able to give in to that, it would be terrible. We couldn't enjoy any movie or book or TV show ever.
You're right.
Right? You agree?
You're right. But I've never thought about it before. It's like I just let myself go into those particular things. Even going back to watching Legally Blonde, I was in the moment. I thought that big square thing that they turned around to change scenes all the time, I believed that was the frat house, and I believed that's
is that
what
I mean.
You mean?
That's
right.
What I mean.
All right.
Is that our
I get
brains
it now.
Let us be, we willingly let it, us be tricked for the better.
But more so in live plays, I have to say, than watching TV,
oh,
in
yeah.
my opinion. All right, now I think I'm following
right.
you. It took 15 minutes, but
that was
I got
easy.
To.
All right, good.
Sorry.
I knew we could pull that off. All right, if you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you in a second. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I'm sorry for getting all metaphysical on you.
You did get a little deep there.
I just...
I felt like going like this.
No, you don't need to do the snaps. I just... it just occurred to me that it's... that the theater business is a miracle.
Live shows, I know exactly what you mean, where, you know, again, there is no real door. They're walking through, like, you know, two-by-fours that are shaped like a frame, and you still can envision them going into another room.
When I was a kid, and like I said, my parents would do these plays, I'd watch that. I'd watch the door frame, and everybody who was seeing the show would accept that. Okay, he was in the room, he walked through the door frame, he's in another room. And they also had a thing where anytime anyone had to go upstairs, there was this thing that they had, which was two stairs up, a small platform, and two stairs down. And when you're a little kid and you're not steeped on the tradition of theater, you go, well, no one's going to believe that. They can see it's just two stairs up, two stairs down, or a door frame. They're not going to buy that. And then you watch the production, you go, oh, no, I'm wrong. Everybody's buying that. Everybody believes it.
So we have to, do we suspend belief? Do we have to fill in the blanks? Is that kind of what it is?
I think so. I think that's right.
All right. Dennis is on the line. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. Well, I was watching the original War of the Worlds and mm-hmm. how simple that movie was, and the new version had to be so complex. Does that
yeah.
mean our minds were much simpler back then than they are now, that we have to go to these really extremes to make it believable?
Well, the scariest version, and I hope this illustrates my point beautifully, the scariest version of War of the Worlds was the one they did on radio with Orson Welles, where we didn't see anything. I mean, it was all in our minds. So that kind of proves it, that we're at any of these arts is just us kind of absolutely filling in the blanks, making it scary or whatever we want it to be.
Sorry, we had a better imagination back then than we do now.
You know what? That might be true.
We did, and, you know, because there was no technology, and now we have technology to do the thinking and entertaining for us.
Yeah.
Right.
That might be true.
Thank mm-hmm. you, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis. That was the complaint when MTV started and you got MTV videos, was that all these artists would say, I liked it better when it was up to the listener to decide what the story was about instead of us showing you what the story was about.
Well, some people liked their story told. I liked music videos when they first started out.
Yeah.
It was pretty great to see what they meant by their song, because
right.
a lot of interpretations may vary,
right.
you know?
Right.
Jan has a comment, too. Hey, Jan.
Hi, how are you?
We're
great,
good.
Jan. What's up?
Well, I just said that actually religion is the greatest show on earth because you have to suspend belief all the time.
You do, don't you?
Yeah, you absolutely do.
Yeah.
And we do. And as soon as you start not, then it's kind of murky area.
It caves in on you if you start to question it all. Yeah. That's
it kind of does.
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you, Jan.
That's a perfect example. Yeah,
you're
sure.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So, but isn't that more like just blind faith as opposed to...
There's a lot more blind faith involved in religion, certainly, than going to see Guys and Dolls at the local VFW hall. Yeah, I think so. I think that's
All
a fair
right, well,
argument. Sure. Yeah.
You don't get the free wine at Guys and Dolls.
No.
And the biscuit.
No, they don't give you either of
they
those.
They don't put the biscuit in the basket in
no.
Guys and Dolls.
No, no, no. All right. hey, guess what? Steve Dale, noted pet expert Steve Dale, will be joining us in just a little bit. If you have any calls or questions for noted pet expert Steve Dale, start thinking them up and dialing us at 312-981-7200. News is next, though. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Woof, woof, woof. That means Steve Dale's here.
Noted pet expert Steve Dale is here. Friend to many. Certainly an expert with anything having to do with animals or pets. Hi, Steve. How are you?
I am great. How are you guys?
Really good. Thanks for asking. Yes. A lot to talk to you about.
That didn't sound enthusiastic.
No, it was. It is. It is. I know that you have had a running feud with a man named Cesar Millan for many, many years.
Yes.
Please explain to everybody who Cesar Millan is and why the two of you can't be friends.
Well, he's the guy who calls himself the dog whisperer.
Yep.
And I wrote a story, I don't know, about a year into the run of his show, and he was hugely popular at that time. Saying he was
the Rachel Ray of dogs.
Yep. I think that's fair. Don't you, Steve? Would you call him the Rachel Ray of dogs?
He had his own stuff. She has her cookware. She's annoying. A little annoying. He had all his stuff, his books, his food, his diamond
collars. Yeah, but Rachel Ray, I'm not sure if you'd follow her recipes that you might die.
Oh.
He's dangerous. You know, I mean, his techniques were then and still can be quite dangerous. That's the problem. So I was on the board. Well, first of all, I wrote a piece. You know, I had national platforms and still do, and I was the first one, as far as I know, who said the guy's dangerous. I called him the dog screamer because by turning over dogs to do what he calls alpha roles, by forcing them to face their fears, by holding them still in one place to face whatever they're afraid of, that isn't whispering. That's screaming at a dog.
That was
really.
The old time, though, that when you got a puppy, if they had an accident in the house, you'd rub their nose in it.
And what did
and
that tell
nothing.
Us? Yeah, the dogs.
They didn't like us. They didn't trust us after that. But,
right.
But that's all we knew, and a lot was learned since those days. But he kept with that kind of thing?
Well, yeah. And his style is self-taught and antiquated, going back to the 50s even, you know? So I was the first one to really write about it, and I was on the board of the American Humane Association at the time, and what we did is we actually pushed National Geographic to put warnings on the screen. Now, here's a dog training show that isn't so benign because they agreed to do it and warn people, don't try this at home.
Really?
Yeah. You still see the warnings on the reruns of his original show that ran for 8 years or so. Those warnings appeared every couple minutes on the screen, and for good reason. So that would be the longstanding,
but he was mad at you for criticizing him, correct?
Oh, he was. Yeah, he wasn't happy with me.
I would,
but so if you know something to be true, why would you let somebody, you know, misinform people? You did the right thing.
Well, I'd like to think so, and it just happened again. So, you know, we're civil to one another when we see one another, and I think he doesn't think about me on a daily basis. But it's unfortunate that what happened just recently happened.
What happened?
So it's a dog by the name of Simon who had a history of attacking other animals, including pigs. And the owner hired Cesar Millan to help her
out. Why is
out.
That funny to you, Bill?
It's not funny. I didn't know that that was a problem in the animal world. That dogs would just say,
well,
I have to find a pig and attack it. Why
well,
would that?
This is a TMZ exclusive, Bill, so pay attention.
I didn't realize.
I believe she had pigs on her property, her own pigs.
Oh, all right.
Didn't like the
it's
fact
no way
that
to talk about her sisters.
No, I don't mean to do that. So Caesar put the dog inside a large ring and first had the dog on a long leash.
Yeah.
No muzzle on the dog, but a long leash will control the dog. The dog can only go so far. And he said he wanted to change the dog to a more positive attitude about the pigs, which would be right. That's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But he didn't do anything to do that. So what you would do is desensitize and counter condition, which is the fancy way of saying take the dog to the point that the dog is not paying attention to the pigs, reward the dog for paying no attention 40 feet away, for example, and then get closer and closer very gradually.
Too
very
time
gradually.
Consuming.
Well, but, right, maybe for TV cameras, but that's the right way to do it. And any trainer anywhere or behaviorist will say that, but he didn't do that. And for whatever reason, the pigs were dealing with this dog pretty good. And it appears as though, when you watch this very carefully, that one of the production assistants was actually holding a pig who then squealed. When the pig squealed, the predictable happened. The dog went after the pig. Great television for some, somehow. The pig got bitten in the ear pretty badly, or not. It depends on whose story you read. But definitely you see blood on the pig's ear, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And then
well,
he rolls...
Well, dogs like those pig ears.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
You can get them at
a
pet shop.
I know.
They're not supposed to be connected to the pig when they...
No, that's the thing.
Right.
So then he rolls over the dog. He goes, tss, 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 that noise he makes, which teaches the dog nothing, and... he's actually up for animal cruelty charges.
Yep. Oh, is
California.
He really?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So you recently...
I happened to run into him, right?
Yeah.
Right. So I was...
You know what I picture, Steve, is you know how when two people are walking their dogs like in a park and they look at each other and they don't get along and they just start fighting? That's what I pictured you and Cesar Millan doing, just like all of a sudden seeing each other and just start going after each other.
No.
You didn't do that? What
no,
happened?
No, no, no. I walked into the exhibit hall at the Western Veterinary Conference in Las Vegas, where I was recently at. I was there to see the largest Great Dane in America, by the way. That's what I went
to. How big
into
is that
the...
thing, like a horse?
Yeah, taller than me, for
could
sure.
Could Bill ride it?
Could I ride it somewhere?
I think, yeah, you could put a saddle on this dog.
I would love
I mean,
to
it's...
do that.
So I walk into the exhibit hall, and there he is. And the line had already... There's a line to see him. I would think veterinary professionals would know better, but I'm told there was a line to see him. The line had died down at that point, and I just went up and said hello. Took a picture. He took a picture. I mean, we chatted for a couple minutes.
Did you guys smile in the picture?
The picture of me talking to him, you can look at it online somewhere, and I don't believe I'm smiling.
Why would you guys submit to a picture if you guys obviously do not get along?
Because we're, you know, that's the problem with America today.
Is what? Is that we all take pictures with people we don't get along with?
No. Well, you wish you did. I mean... Remember back in the day, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to go out for drinks together, right? So they
sure
said.
Sure they did.
Yeah, they at least talked to one another.
Right.
Which one are you? Are you Reagan or O'Neill?
Tip O'Neill. Which are you?
What do you think, Steve?
I'm just showing Bill the giant Great Dane that's 167 pounds.
Isn't that dog amazing?
That's like Clifford.
Yeah.
He looks like Clifford the Big Red
huge.
Dog.
It was a sweet dog, by the way.
All right,
really
so you posed
dog.
For a picture with a guy you don't like and he doesn't like you.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean we can't chit-chat. And had I known about the pig incident in detail, I really would have asked him about it. I would have said, what in the hell
what are
you, were
you doing?
Thinking? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. He said, I did ask him about it, but I hadn't seen it, you know, so I didn't know the extent of it. And he said something to the effect, well, it's all exaggerated and it was taken out of context.
It's on video.
Mm-hmm.
Not
so
really.
It can't be exaggerated if there's video of it.
And then what National Geographic Explorer did is they, and I wonder how people think about this. You know, maybe folks out there disagree with me. I don't know. Or maybe they agree. It would be interesting to hear. So National Geographic defended him and then said, well, look at this video, sort of part two of this, and it kind of worked out. So what Millan did is he attached the dog to the pig he had bitten the day before by a leash. And the pig was running going, can you do a pig squeal? I can't really.
No,
I can do a pig
squeal, squeal.
Oh, that's good.
That's
pretty
just
good.
Just like that.
Right, all the louder. Like that.
The pig was doing that, running for his life,
after
probably.
The history between the dog and the pig doesn't want to play any more games.
I don't think so.
Right,
but
so why did he put them together on the same leash?
I cannot possibly come up with an answer to that. I have no clue. He lucked out because the dog didn't again attack this pig. I think the dog was so freaked out by everything
sure.
that was going on and just didn't do it. But that was total luck.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't fathom. I don't know a dog trainer who would solve the problem that way. It
you
seems
know, when
to be
your little when your kids don't get along, you put
you
them together
put
on
them
the
together
same
on a leash.
Leash.
Sure, you do. That's a tried
do?
True.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh,
that's,
okay.
Really, that's how yes. ridiculous it is.
Yes, it is. And this pig could have gotten killed.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what he was thinking. It actually kind of worked out. Nobody was killed, and the pig ran away squealing, and the dog followed without attacking. And
yeah.
Millan called that a victory. I don't know.
Wendy, if noted pet expert Steve Dale doesn't know, how could you and I possibly know? It's impossible.
I don't.
A lot of people have questions for you
About Caesar Milan.
I'm sure. 312-981-7200. If you have a question for noted pet expert Steve Dale.
Some people love him. And when I write bad things about him, they say I'm a racist. They say I'm jealous of him.
Yeah.
Or they say I don't know what I'm talking about. So we'll see what people say.
All right. We will see what people say about you, Steve, next.
Uh-oh.
Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, so we are talking to noted pet expert Steve Dale, and he's on the air Sunday mornings from
6:30 to 7.
All right, you were talking about Caesar Milan, and there was something that it's all over TMZ, really. So this is big time
news.
Yeah,
it was on the network news even.
And Susan,
it led off the network news, Wendy.
Well, it should.
On Saturday, I saw it was the top story.
Really? Susan, I wouldn't doubt it.
Susan wanted to corroborate the Caesar Milan training efforts. What does your vet say, Susan?
Hi, Bill and Wendy. Love your show.
Thank you, Susan.
So I have a 6-month-old mini golden doodle, and on my first appointment at the vet, I said, we need to train him. What do you recommend? I said, Caesar Milan. She goes, no way. Vets do not like that guy.
True.
So I never did. But now my golden doodle, he jumps and he nips till he's 6 months. So, Steve, my question for you is this a puppy thing he's going to outgrow, or do we need to get him some additional training? We just did it at the local, retail box, big box pet stores.
Right. So puppies jump up to say hello to us. It's a perfectly natural thing to do.
Bill
if you
does
are
that,
puppy.
Too.
Sometimes I'll do that, Steve.
Puppies and Bill Left do that. Yep. It's a perfectly natural thing for them to do. So appropriate training is really a good idea. Positive reinforcement dog training. Go to a dog trainer. Choose a dog trainer that, however, is the antithesis of Mr. Milan and uses positive reinforcement. So the dog is taught different things. And a dog who just wants to say hello to you, you could teach the dog to sit and then you pet the dog. But the dog's just being an excitable labradoodle. It's perfectly normal behavior. But it's not great behavior because the dog will get bigger and bigger and bigger.
So it's good to nip it in the bud now.
Yeah, otherwise the dog will jump on grandma a couple years from now. We don't want that.
That's how my grandma died.
Oh, no.
What?
That's so sad.
No. Hope not.
Steve.
Yes?
So there's one trainer who says he guarantees he can train dogs not to, bite human skin. So he doesn't bite people. Do you believe that can happen? And I have to send him away for a couple weeks.
No.
Don't do it.
Right. Thank you. Anywhere where you have to send the dog away, I would.
You don't know what they're doing to
them. That's true.
It could be, they can be, proponents of Caesar Milan, and who knows?
Yeah, I would not do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
thank you, Susan. There are a lot of places that do that. I took Tiki to one of the pet stores that had a training thing, and it's, you just have to work with him a little more
right.
than I did. He
sure.
knows how to sit. He knows how to stay. He just chooses not to.
And also for puppies, the advantage of training class is teaching people, first of all, but it's also learning to communicate with another species on both ends, from one end of the leash to the other, opening that window of communication.
All right, Dorothy has a question about her puppy dog. Hi, Dorothy.
Hey, Dorothy.
Hi.
Do you have a question?
I do. I have a 3-year-old, Cocker Spaniel is adorable, but he likes to go out in our invisible fence backyard, which is an acre, and he now, because the ground's wet, he wants to dig all over the place.
Yeah, we have holes all over.
Yeah. How do we stop this? Because I'm taking him on a leash because I don't want to wreck my yard.
Well, you just answered one way in which you could stop it. I mean, supervision. So dogs given no supervision will be dogs. They will
Children
have an opportunity. Well, probably. They will do whatever is self and reinforcing for them. So for many dogs, that's digging. It's what dogs enjoy doing. Now, what you can do, because you have an acre to do it, if you're willing, is you can give your dog a place to dig. Create a corner, wherever that is, and say, here, dig here. And you can communicate that to the dog by burying a toy with treats in it or something, just like an inch under, so the dog is sure to find it, and make that the dog's place to dig. So the dog goes out there and whoosh, makes a zooms right over to that place.
He's because, so expressive, isn't he?
He's very expressive,
because
Steve.
That will be the place for the dog to dig, and the dog will understand that. You know?
The dog will understand the boundaries of you can dig here, but not everywhere else?
Well, not necessarily quite that way, but if the dog is digging here, then the dog isn't digging elsewhere, because there's good stuff to find here.
Oh, all right.
God, what? Steve Dale just has to move in with us.
I'd like that.
Oh, he can move in here, too.
Oh, that sounds like an offer.
Do you guys all have dessert?
I can make some.
I'm moving in with her. Sorry, Wendy. She's got dessert.
Thank you, Dorothy. Good luck.
That happened fast.
Yes.
All right. This is a weird thing. Hi, Marcy. Does your dog eat dog food or other things?
Yeah, he eats dog poo, and I've tried that. The trainer said, oh, put some pineapple in his food. Tried that, didn't work. Someone else said, sprinkle, go out in the yard. You know, we try to pick up every day, but sometimes the one dog goes out, and he goes out right after her, and it's like the Play-Doh machine. It's so gross. Try to sprinkle.
That's the one bad thing about springtime when all the snow has melted and you go in your backyard, and boy, you can fill some garbage cans up.
There's... You know, I sprinkled like the hot pepper on it.
Yeah.
For a little while, he started again, didn't bother him.
So there's
worse when we're on walks, because, I mean, I try to, you know, I'm walking both of them, and he is so stinking fast, but...
Why do they do that, Steve?
Yeah.
It's not good.
Well, there may be...
It's not fudge, dogs.
There may be some breed predisposition. Studies have been done to show certain breeds do it a bit more often, but individual dogs just develop the taste for reasons unknown. Now, some say there are enzymes missing in their food. So you
could... That's what I told my husband, and he laughed at me.
Well,
husbands always laugh at women.
Well, yeah, I'm guilty. So
you must know mine, Wendy.
There is a product called Prozyme. You could purchase that and sprinkle that on the food. I can't guarantee that'll work, but if you believe the theory that I just suggested, it's worth a try. You could also try Lowry's seasoning salt.
And that's going to make it tastier.
No, on the food.
Oh.
And then the theory is that what comes out the other end isn't as tasty. There's two products. One is called Forbid, and the other is called Deter. And like many people
should be deterred,
apparently,
oh, come on.
You have not had success with it. The other thing you can do, you've already tried, and that is to put like hot sauce and something, you know, lime, because dogs generally, lime juice or lemon juice.
Oh.
Dogs don't like that
Tiki
citrus.
Tiki loves that.
But that's the thing. Dogs all, it's a condiment to many dogs. And you have to run out there, sprinkle this like hot sauce recipe. By the time you do that, you might as well just pick up the stuff. And that's what I would recommend.
Steve, the cookbook you put out would be the worst-selling cookbook of all time.
Marcy, thank you. Good luck to you, all right?
You guys, you crack me up.
Thanks, Marcy.
They crack me up, too.
Who would buy that?
I would.
Oh, man.
You want to write it with me?
No.
Oh.
Uh-uh.
I think that would be... That's not been done.
No.
When I make fresh lime margaritas or a freshie, I always have lime on my hand, and the dog, Tiki, will just lick my hand dry.
Most dogs don't like it, but that's the thing. Every dog,
Everyone's different, all people,
have individual taste buds.
Wow. All right, that's noted pet expert Steve Dale.
There he goes. Oh, check out what I wrote about Cesar Millan. It did go viral, as they say.
It did.
Yeah,
did you like Cesar Romero when he was alive? You were a fan of his,
correct? Oh, love
Everybody
the Joker.
Loves Cesar Romero.
Of course,
sure.
And all those movies he was in, Mr. Romantico.
Yep.
The blog is at stevedale.tv.
Thank you, noted pet expert Steve Dale. We will take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.